Russell Tour, so is that other guy.
No, it's about second to the last row on the right. He's wearing a brown jacket and a blue shirt. He's next to the guy with a hat. To the left of the back of the hat, he's watching. Now he's just moved. He's just walked away.
The one in the suit?
Yeah.
That's that technical mechanism? I don't know why I said that. It's all special.
It is special?
No. Oh, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah? Any...
Yeah, where's,
any
the,
problems?
Where's the special rapporteur going to be sitting?
Ooh, I don't know.
I don't know. That's what I was told. But
isn't it... I think last year he was at the end over there.
The end?
Yeah.
Okay.
That, yeah, why not?
Okay.
Hey.
And
excuse me, or that one?
Will the president of the Norwegian Sand Parliament be on the speaking list this afternoon?
For item four? For item four? Human.
That much ideas. Okay.
Wow, wow.
I want to have a coffee.
I don't know if you're going to sit or if he's even here.
Who?
John
special rapporteur?
Well, he's going to sit here. Well, the special rapporteur sat here last year, and Brody said,
but as we said, we will give you this reply sent.
Right, yeah. Can you please take your seats now because we're starting? Please take your seats and be silent. Okay. The fifth meeting, good afternoon, everybody. The fifth meeting of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, before taking up item 4 on our agenda, I would like to give the floor to a few participants who did not have the opportunity to speak on agenda item 3C. Then we can come back to them again after we look at the human rights agenda item. But before I move, I would like our secretary to make a few announcements and explanations. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, madam. I want to make few explanations. The first one is about right of reply. The right of reply is the right of every delegation, which is given to them at the end of the meeting or at the end of the day, whatever at the discretion of the chairperson, whatever case might be. The right of reply usually consists of 5 minutes, but since our statements are 3 minutes and the chairperson made a ruling on that, of course, it's natural that right of reply cannot be longer than the statement itself. So here again, at the ruling of the chairperson, the right of reply first one will be limited to 3 minutes, and the second one to a minute and a half. Again, as I said, they will be coming at the end of the meeting or at the end of the day. So please make this distinguish those two between each other. I mean, right of reply is something that you are specifically keeping to reply to any statement or allegation. Whether the statement is a different thing. There is one thing. Another one is we've been approached by a number of delegations, members of forum and others. The problem is that photographing during these statements. Of course, some of the actions are agreed with the person who is making a statement, but most of the cases it is not, and it is disturbing. Please, again, we appeal once again not to photograph and not to film during the statements. If that happens from now on, we will be interrupting the statement and we will be asking the person who is taking photo to either stop or to leave the room. I want to be completely and fully clear on that issue. And the last one is the statements. The interpreters are doing a tremendous job, and we are also thankful to them. But let's not make their life even more difficult by making lengthy and fast statements, because everybody is trying to make their statement to cramp everything into 1-3 minutes, and they are speaking way too fast. So please speak a little slower, and the full statements you can submit to Secretariat. It will be taken note of. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before we take up agenda item 4, which is on human rights, and we will also have the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous peoples, I would just like to take a few speakers from the item 3C, which we didn't manage to call yesterday. But I will please urge all of you, the ones I'm calling, to stick to 3 minutes because we have a long agenda item on human rights. So with that, I would first like to call on Deborah Harry, who will speak on behalf of the North American Caucus. Is Deborah Harry in the room? No? Okay, I'll call on Eva Aguirre, who will speak on behalf of the Global Women's Caucus. Yes, you have the floor. 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The Indigenous Women of the World have the following recommendations. Hello.
Yes, you're on.
We recommend that the Permanent Forum request UN agencies and bodies and states to disseminate widely the program of the second international decade of the world's indigenous people, targeting with special consideration its dissemination in rural communities. We recommend that the Permanent Forum urge UN bodies and agencies to organize, in cooperation with the Commission on the Status of Women, a World Conference on Indigenous Women's Issues, with special attention given to women's issues in the Beijing Plus 15 review. We request that the following key issues affecting Indigenous women are addressed: health, education, Indigenous women's knowledge systems, lands, territories, resource rights, migration, and the impact on Indigenous women, climate change, violence against women, armed conflict, militarization, and water. We request the permanent forum to urge UN bodies and agencies, governments, corporations, and industries that in implementing Indigenous people's right to free, prior, and informed consent in any fora, projects, and programs, Indigenous women are given priority opportunities for full and effective participation, and are decisions taken into consideration with equal value as those of others. We strongly urge that the permanent forum recommends to ECOSOC, in coordination with the Office of United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, UNIFEM, and UNICEF, to call for the coordination of an official UN experts meeting on traditional Indigenous knowledge. We recommend the forum to urge states to contribute to voluntary fund for programs specifically addressing Indigenous women's issues living in both rural communities and urban cities. We recommend the permanent forum to urge states to assign sufficient funds to continue working in the revitalization of Indigenous languages at all levels, from the creation of Indigenous language nests to the development of culturally relevant curricula, plans, and programs, to the training and certification of Indigenous teachers in Indigenous languages. We recommend the permanent forum to develop and implement educational and cultural policies in order to ensure that the Indigenous women have equal access to education at all levels. In doing so, as we have stated in our intervention on Agenda Item 3A, states must recognize Indigenous women's cultural diversity and their right to Indigenous-centered education. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Eva Aguirre, who spoke on behalf of the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus. I now call on Wilton Littlechild, who will speak on behalf of the International Organization of Indigenous Resource Development and other organizations in Canada. Wilton, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to all delegations. Our delegation calls calls attention to the UN Permanent Forum's second session on the theme of Indigenous children and youth. We called on the Committee on the Rights of the Child to hold its annual Day of General Discussion on the Rights of Indigenous Children. You will recall they subsequently adopted specific recommendations aimed primarily at the states' parties, but also UN entities, human rights mechanisms, civil society, donors, the World Bank, and regional development banks. One of the desired outcomes was a general comment on the rights of Indigenous children, as provided for by the Convention on the Rights of the Child. On January 30th this year, it was again an honor to be present in Geneva when the General Comment number 11 was adopted. Madam Chair, we present this intervention for the record to formally thank the UN Permanent Forum and the Secretariat, and through you, the Committee on the Rights of the Child. In your review of recommendations, this is one you can highlight as completed, as it begins a new relationship and focus on Indigenous children. We therefore respectfully recommend the following recommendations. One, we call upon the 8th session of the Permanent Forum to urge all state parties to the Convention on the Rights of the Child to apply the CRC General Comment number 11 in implementing their obligations. Secondly, we call upon the 8th session of the Permanent Forum to endorse and adopt the proposed resolution referenced in the Global Caucus Statement, and which we respectfully submit now, on the rights of the Indigenous child to health and education, pursuant to the resolution adopted by the UN General Assembly on the 13th of March this year. Finally, on a related matter, we note the very important UNPF report, the Permanent Forum report entitled Indigenous Peoples and Boarding Schools, a comparative study. It's contained in CRP1. But what we would like to recommend, Madam Chair, is that it be considered as an official United Nations or an official UN Permanent Forum report. Thank you very much for your consideration on these matters.
Thank you very much, Willy Little Child. The conference room papers actually are also considered official reports of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Peoples. So we can indeed consider that as an official report. Okay, I would like now to call on Mariana Francisco, who will speak on behalf of the Central American Caucus. Is Mariana Francisco in the room? Yes, you have the floor.
Excelentísima Presidenta de la octava sesión del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas de la ONU, aprovechando el segundo decenio internacional de los pueblos indígenas del mundo, por este medio daremos a conocer la situación de los pueblos indígenas de Centroamérica. Al mismo tiempo, damos nuestras recomendaciones ante el Foro Permanente. Que el Consejo de Derechos Indígenas, el número 217A, considere a las naciones de los pueblos indígenas originarios del Salvador, respetándolos al libre ejercicio de sus derechos, como lo establecen las declaraciones de las Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Instamos a dar seguimiento de las recomendaciones establecidas en el Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas, específicamente al relator especial de los pueblos indígenas, doctor James Anaya, a la vez que elabore un reporte sobre esta situación, ya que en el pueblo de San Salvador han sido ignorados nuestros hermanos indígenas. Que se le proponga atención a la violación de los derechos humanos, principalmente en las razones de los desplazamientos, con énfasis en la aplicación de políticas neoliberales implementados por los gobiernos y las transnacionales. Que se enfatice que los pueblos indígenas han sido desplazados, no reubicados, debido a las condiciones indígenas promovidas por los gobiernos históricos y actuales. Que las Naciones Unidas monitoree la violación de los derechos humanos de los pueblos desplazados desde el país de origen, tránsito y destino, principalmente por los pueblos indígenas. Que los gobernantes de los países centroamericanos respeten el proceso y la revalorización de nuestras formas de vida. Que las propicias de organización, sistema de justicia y cosmovisión, entre otros. Que las Naciones Unidas verifique la criminalización de la juventud desplazada y no desplazada en los países de origen, tránsito y destino. Las Naciones Unidas debe prestar atención a una investigación exhaustiva a los casos de femicidio, a la vez elaborar un informe sobre las causas, motivos responsables de los delitos, inste a los países a proteger los derechos de la vida de las mujeres y la juventud. Recomendamos al Foro Permanente garantizar la participación plena de sus participantes, procurando garantizar el derecho a la libre expresión de los mismos. Los pueblos indígenas somos la mayoría y los más empobrecidos en los estados. En nuestras comunidades, pueblos, estamos en un proceso de revalorización de nuestras formas propias de organización, como sistema de justicia, cosmovisión, entre otros. Sin embargo, su reconocimiento desde el Estado ha sido folclorización y el popularismo, que no contribuye al cambio, la situación de opresión que aspiramos, que es una plena participación en la toma de decisiones en los ámbitos como político, social, cultural y económico y ambiental. La población desplazada en su mayoría es indígena, siendo la más vulnerable.
Can you please conclude now? Please conclude your statement.
Okay. Hasta aquí quiero terminar, terminando y pidiéndolo al foro permanente de casos de cuestiones indígenas, darle seguimiento al reconocimiento a nuestros hermanos indígenas de San Salvador, El Salvador. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Miss Mariana Francisco, who spoke on behalf of the Central American Caucus. I'd like now to call on the representative of the observer government of Mexico, Ms. Gabriela Garduce. You have the floor, madam.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. México reafirma su compromiso con la plena aplicación del Programa de Acción del Segundo Decenio Internacional de los Pueblos Indígenas del Mundo, cuyo objetivo es continuar fortaleciendo la cooperación internacional para la solución de los problemas a que se enfrentan los pueblos indígenas. Bajo este marco, para México cobra particular importancia la coordinación que establezcan los organismos, programas y fondos de Naciones Unidas por ser factor determinante para apuntalar la aplicación de la meta del segundo decenio. En México, la atención a los pueblos indígenas por parte del gobierno federal se realiza por diversas dependencias, las que bajo el principio de la transversalidad atienden distintos aspectos de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas dentro del ámbito de su competencia. Bajo dicho esquema, destaco el trabajo de la Secretaría de Educación Pública referente a la educación intercultural bilingüe y en ese marco la del Instituto Nacional de Lenguas Indígenas, el de la Secretaría de Salud, en lo que respecta a la salud indígena brindada con pertinencia cultural, que incorpora la práctica de la medicina tradicional, aspecto dentro del cual no podría dejar de mencionarles su relevante programa de parteras. La labor del Instituto Nacional de las Mujeres para con los derechos de las mujeres indígenas, en particular en los temas de violencia y de equidad. El compromiso del Consejo Nacional para Prevenir la Discriminación para con los integrantes de los pueblos indígenas de México. La acción contra la pobreza, que desafortunadamente aún afecta a los pueblos indígenas de mi país, de la Secretaría de Desarrollo Social. La mediación de la Secretaría de Gobernación en la solución de conflictos. La participación de la Secretaría de Medio Ambiente y Recursos Naturales en los temas de la naturaleza, tan propia de la idiosincrasia indígena y eje rector de su visión del mundo. Sin dejar de mencionar, por supuesto, la labor en favor del desarrollo con pertinencia cultural encabezada por la Comisión Nacional para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas. Igualmente, destaco la labor de la Comisión Nacional de Derechos Humanos, en especial con su programa La Protección y Observancia de los Derechos Humanos de los Pueblos Indígenas, con el cual se complementa la protección y defensa de los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas a través de sus resoluciones, orientaciones, conciliaciones o recomendaciones. Estas dependencias y otras tantas cuya participación es imposible mencionar en virtud de lo apremiante del tiempo, han establecido relaciones de cooperación en el marco de sistemas del Sistema de Naciones Unidas con el objetivo de dar cumplimiento a la meta del segundo decenio. Quisiera destacar como uno de los más recientes ejemplos el acercamiento de la Comisión Nacional para el Desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas para colaborar con el UNICEF en materia de capacitación entre las comunidades indígenas sobre los derechos del niño, así como el apoyo para realizar acciones de registro civil entre los pueblos indígenas, en particular a través del otorgamiento de actas de nacimiento que garantizan su derecho de identidad. No obstante lo anterior, aún queda camino por recorrer para subsanar el rezago histórico en materia de derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas. Concluyo en un minuto. Señora Presidenta, México coincide en que se presenta una importante oportunidad respecto al seguimiento puntual de las distintas medidas adoptadas a nivel nacional, regional e internacional en cumplimiento de la meta y objetivos del segundo decenio internacional en el marco de la evaluación de mitad de periodo que pidió la Asamblea General para 2010. Alentamos al foro a examinar esta cuestión de manera de contar con mayores elementos sobre la forma en que podremos contribuir a dicha evaluación. La Delegación de México hace votos porque la labor del foro permanente nos oriente en el cumplimiento de la meta y objetivos del segundo decenio y porque bajo dicho esquema integremos una verdadera alianza para la acción y la dignidad. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. Ms. Gabriela Gardosa, who is representative of the Observer Government of Mexico, and also for mentioning that you are willing to participate in the evaluation of the implementation of the program of work of the second decade. Thank you very much. The last person before we move on to the next agenda item, I would like to call on Hipólito Achevi, who is a representative of CAPI, Umbrella Organization of Indigenous People's Organizations in Paraguay. Is Hipólito Achevi in the room? I see. Yeah, okay. You have the floor, sir.
Muchas gracias, Presidenta. Estimados miembros del Foro Permanente, distinguidos representantes de comunidades y pueblos indígenas, agradecemos esta oportunidad de presentarnos ante este órgano internacional. Particularmente queremos expresar nuestro profundo aprecio y agradecimiento a los expertos miembros del foro que eligieron nuestro país para su primera visita oficial realizada en abril del presente año. Fue un placer, señora Presidenta y señores miembros, el poder recibir y acompañar su delegación en nuestras comunidades, donde observamos su interés y compromiso con nuestro pueblo con resultado de cambiar nuestra propia actitud de afrontar la problemática de la servidumbre por deuda y los desafíos que dejaron en nosotros una impresión permanente de solidaridad. Esperamos seguir fortaleciendo esta relación estrecha con este órgano interlocutora por la causa de nuestros pueblos y consolidar en este segundo decenio de los pueblos indígenas. Una gran inquietud, señora Presidenta, que tenemos es que en este momento la información sobre red cambios climáticos, además de los posibles mecanismos para garantizar la participación efectiva de los pueblos indígenas y la protección de sus derechos en la realización de tales programas y estrategias, no han sido establecidos de manera visible. Las organizaciones indígenas no pueden comprometerse plenamente aún a este proceso que no termina de comprenderse. Por esto, recomendamos al foro la intermediación ante el PNUD del país noruego, país donante principal en Paraguay respecto al RED, y al gobierno de Paraguay a impulsar y garantizar un proceso participativo de traspaso de información adecuada, los mecanismos para crear espacio y la participación indígena en la elaboración de estrategia país. Por esto, sin perjudicar la cuestión de los programas de RED, solicitamos al Foro Permanente, recomiende al Estado paraguayo que cualquier mecanismo relacionado a los cambios climáticos a ser establecido con otras instituciones o países tendrán objetivo principal la de afirmar los derechos de los pueblos indígenas como precondición de un discurso sobre diseño e implementación de proyectos y estrategias. Además, solicitamos al Foro Permanente que recomiende que particularmente en países piloto para los proyectos de red y los fondos adecuados estén dedicados para lograr la plena participación de los pueblos indígenas. porque siempre hemos sido nosotros los responsables de la protección, conservación, convivencia mutua en la naturaleza desde nuestra propia cosmovisión. Por lo tanto, aclaramos ante este pleno del foro que no somos responsables de los cambios climáticos que actualmente afecta a la humanidad en el mundo. Sigue la deforestación en el Chaco, señora presidenta y señores miembros, por la falta de acción e indefinición del Parlamento Nacional de nuestro país. Todavía hay comunidades que no cuentan con el reconocimiento de derecho a la propiedad del Estado. Ayer, 19 de mayo, se cumple el plazo de 3 años de la condena de la Corte Interamericana de Derecho en la comunidad afectada, las comunidades Aguayamaza y Yaquiaxa, y estas comunidades siguen viviendo en la pobreza. Solicitamos al Foro Permanente que recuerde al Estado paraguayo, miembro de la ONU, su obligación de cumplir con las sentencias de las Cortes Internacionales y adoptar todos los mecanismos administrativos y legislativos necesarios para hacer efectivos los derechos humanos afirmados en los pactos internacionales ratificados por nuestro país. Quiero mencionar en su visita de los expertos Foro Permanente que han comprobado la deplorable situación laboral de los trabajadores indígenas del Chaco paraguayo. Queremos informarles, señora presidenta, que debido a su visita, recientemente el ministro de Trabajo y Justicia de nuestra nación visitó la región para interiorizarse, investigar y confirmar esta situación grave. Solicitamos al Foro Permanente que de seguimiento a la implementación de sus recomendaciones que han sido remitidas al Gobierno Nacional, al fin de su visita a Paraguay, para mejorar las condiciones de vida de nuestros pueblos. Solicitamos igualmente el apoyo del Foro Permanente a que acompañe en la gestión impulsada por los pueblos indígenas en el rechazo de la legislación nacional de un proyecto de ley que está a punto de ser hecha ley en el Paraguay, que permitirá el uso indiscriminado de agrotóxicos y plaguicidas que afectará en forma nociva la salud de nuestros pueblos. Aprovecho igualmente, señora presidenta, de anunciar en este foro el tercer encuentro latinoamericano de gobiernos locales en territorios indígenas, que le agradecemos al representante del Gobierno de España el anuncio que fue hecho ayer en este foro. Nuestro profundo agradecimiento a póstumo al jefe Cayuga de SCAET por permitirnos llegar en las Naciones Unidas con nuestra propia voz. Finalmente, señora presidenta, lo brevemente mencionado da una visión panorámica de lo que está sucediendo en el Paraguay. Distinguida presidenta del Foro Permanente, honorable miembro del Foro, a la diversidad de pueblos indígenas presentes en esta 8ª sesión del Foro Permanente, le agradecemos por la atención a nuestra palabra. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Hipólito Achevi from the CAPI. I gave you more time because it's the first time I think that we got a representative from an indigenous representative from Paraguay. So I really thank you very much. Now I close the list for the meantime for C until we find time to again open it up, because we now have to move to agenda item 4, which is on human rights. We will be listening to two persons. First, the rapporteur of the expert group meeting on the implementation of Article 42 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was held here in New York in January, Les Malizer. And after that, we will listen to my distinguished colleague in the forum, Karsten Smith, who will present his general comments on Article 42. And then after that, we will invite the special rapporteur on the situation of indigenous peoples' rights and the representative of the expert mechanism on indigenous peoples' rights. So let me give the floor now to Les Malizer, who will present a summary of the expert group meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, if I might, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and thank them for the opportunity to be here in this capacity to present this report. Madam Chair, I'm presenting the report of the International Expert Group meeting on the role of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in the implementation of Article 42 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This is available in the documents as document E/C.19/2009/2. This meeting was held at the United Nations headquarters here in New York from the 14th to the 16th of January in 2009. The organisation of work and the programme of work is reproduced in Annex 1 to the report. The meeting was attended by experts from the 7 Indigenous socio-cultural regions, the members of the Permanent Forum, the chairperson of the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, observers from departments, agencies, funds and programs of the United Nations systems, observers from other intergovernmental organisations, Indigenous peoples, organisations and bodies and non-governmental organisations, and observers representing member states. The full list of participants is contained in the Annex 2 to the document. In beginning the meeting, the election of the officers was Victoria Tally Corpus was elected chairperson for the meeting and Les Melzer elected as rapporteur. The chairperson then made an introductory comment, pointing out that the adoption of the declaration marked a major victory for the world's Indigenous peoples and an extraordinary achievement in international standard setting and presented a key opportunity to motivate states to comply with human rights standards, including those set forth in the Declaration. Article 42 of the Declaration signals a new mandate for the Permanent Forum, establishing that the United Nations, its bodies, including the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and specialised agencies, including at the country level, and states shall promote respect for and full application of the provisions of this Declaration and follow up the effectiveness of this declaration. The chairperson also noted that in the sixth session of the Permanent Forum in 2007, two of the members, Ida Nicholson and Wilton Littlechild, were appointed to conduct a study on the structures, procedures and mechanisms that presently exist and that might be established to effectively address the human rights situations of Indigenous peoples, and to arrange for Indigenous representation and inclusion in such structures, procedures and mechanisms. That report is E/C.19/2008/2. Madam Chairperson, in application of the Declaration, the experts noted that some United Nations agencies and their interagency support group had in the past referred to the Declaration as a non-binding instrument, which they considered to be misleading. While it was not binding in the nature of or to the degree of a treaty, it was binding in character, and states could be bound under international law in other ways besides treaty ratification. The Declaration was a human rights standard that did not create new or special rights, but elaborated upon fundamental human rights of universal application and set those rights in the cultural, economic, political and social context of the Indigenous peoples. The General Assembly had adopted Article 42 of the Declaration, which called upon the Permanent Forum to promote respect for and full application of the Declaration and to follow up its effectiveness. The experts agreed that a new mandate existed for the United Nations systems, including the Permanent Forum, to encourage and assess measures to uphold the Declaration, and that discourse with the states on the application of human rights was expressed in the Declaration. Participants also agreed that it was important that the Permanent Forum integrate the Declaration into its recommendations on the six substantive mandated areas of its work, as well as in its work under the special theme for each session and ongoing themes and priorities. In doing so, the Permanent Forum should consider not only the articles of the Declaration, but also preambular paragraphs, which gave context to the instrument and were often overlooked. There was also the view that the Permanent Forum should integrate the Declaration into its future research projects and publications including country-specific studies, implementation guides, and compilations of good practice. Experts propose that a priority task should be for the permanent forum to elaborate interpretive statements or general comments on the most important provisions of the declaration. The participants in the meeting underscored the importance of the jurisprudence of the existing human rights treaty bodies and special procedures in addressing the human rights of Indigenous peoples, but also expressed concerns regarding instances where the declaration was not adequately utilised or Indigenous issues were not sufficiently addressed, nor recommendations implemented. The suggestion was made during the meeting that the Permanent Forum arrange its program of work to provide dialogue with the states in relation to implementation of the declaration, and that dialogue should be based on good practices regarding the application of the declaration. Madam Chair, successful implementation of the declaration ultimately depends on the extent to which Indigenous peoples themselves understand and utilise the human rights regime at the local as well as at the national levels. To promote human rights education as a tool for capacity building, dialogue and effective direct participation by Indigenous peoples is necessary, even dialogue on whether such human rights education is needed. Without the inclusion of distinct Indigenous perspectives in training and capacity building programs, it will be difficult for Indigenous peoples to achieve equity and mutual understanding with others. Also in this meeting, the experts reiterated that states have primary responsibility for the implementation of the declaration. Implementing the declaration at the state level involves economic implications and political will, particularly in states that recognise historical injustices towards their Indigenous peoples. Hence the need to disseminate and inform Indigenous communities of the declaration. It is an important development and requires coordination between states and the United Nations agencies. Madam Chair, I refer to the recommendations in the report. The meeting noted with great appreciation the papers submitted and the many constructive recommendations, suggestions and ideas presented by the participants on a variety of subjects, as highlighted in this present report, and bring these to the attention of the Permanent Forum for appropriate action. These documents can be found in Annex 3 of the report. The report recommends a draft resolution which might be considered by the Permanent Forum members for adoption at this session. This recommendation includes that the Permanent Forum invite participants, including representatives of states, Indigenous peoples and United Nations agencies, to submit written reports under this topic. That the Permanent Forum appoint a task team consisting of 8 members to examine reports and communicate with submitting parties as might be appropriate. And to encourage states in particular to support this procedure and to use it as an opportunity to provide the Permanent Forum with substantive information on the implementation of the declaration and a reliable assessment of the effectiveness of the declaration at the national and the local levels. The meeting recommends that the Permanent Forum be aware that significant financial and other resources are required within the United Nations system to implement Article 42 of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The Secretary General should therefore provide an adequate budget for the purposes of meeting the requirements of Article 42 of the Declaration, as it may apply to the Permanent Forum, its Secretariat and relevant actions. The Permanent Forum should also remind all agencies of the United Nations systems that they should undertake initiatives within a reasonable time frame to ensure Indigenous peoples' effective engagement, dialogue and negotiations regarding the exercise of their human rights. And the Permanent Forum strongly urge the United Nations agencies to review their budgets and ensure that the programs and strategies they are applying aptly benefit and are in direct support of Indigenous peoples. And finally, the Permanent Forum urges donors to the Voluntary Fund to increase their contributions or, in the case of new contributors, to make donations to the Trust Fund commensurate with the importance of implementing Articles 39 and Article 42 of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. That represents my presentation of the report. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Les. Thank you very much, Les Malizer, for presenting a summary of the report of the expert group meeting on the role of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in the implementation of Article 42 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I now turn to my distinguished colleague, Karsten Smith, to give his the summary of his paper on his general comment on the implementation of Article 42. You have the floor, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I shall then speak further on the implementation of the declaration. When the declaration on the rights of indigenous peoples was adopted, then the permanent forum was assigned a new function and an extended mandate. The purpose of the declaration is to constitute the legal basis for all activities in the areas of indigenous issues. The task of the permanent forum in the years to come will be to act towards transforming the declaration in its entirety to living law. All acts against the rights of indigenous peoples are taking place within the jurisdiction of states. Therefore, is the implementation the very center of the indigenous issues. When we mention the declaration, we should at the same time speak about the implementation. Something wrong. This implementation is at least a two-stage process. First, the declaration shall be implemented in the national legislation and governmental regulations of the various countries, and we know that there is already in this respect a huge implementation gap. But secondly, the implementation to living law is not fulfilled until the indigenous peoples meet the practical results on the ground. Thus, the implementation gap we can see today, the world around, is very huge. A really, one could say, wide open implementation canyon. However, the new function of the permanent forum implies that the forum has to follow up the effectiveness of the declaration, and that means closing the gap. In this new Article 42 situation, the permanent forum has to clarify the content and range of this responsibility. An adoption of a commentary of the new function, a general comment, if you like, may serve this purpose. The new situation created by the declaration makes this way of clarification, it's well known from other UN bodies, a natural line of proceeding. And then an attempt has been made within the forum to draft such a general comment. And this draft is presented to this meeting as a conference room paper. The declaration is a legal document and is therefore open for various interpretations. The draft which is presented is, one might say, realistic as well as positive. The draft takes, among others, the following positions. The declaration is not a treaty. and it has accordingly not the binding force of a treaty. On the other hand, there are a number of elements motivating a binding character of at least parts of the declaration. In its wording, the Article 42 gives only duties to the Permanent Forum with regard to this new function, not any clear authority to accomplish what is required. The authority of the Permanent Forum will therefore have to be decided by a reading of the declaration as a whole. The draft general comment makes such a reading. A general comment may be adopted at this session or maybe not. In any case, the Permanent Forum shall today and in the future apply the declaration as the superior norm for all its activities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, distinguished colleague, member of the Permanent Forum, Karsten Smith. I think the work you did on that is indeed also groundbreaking. And I would like to open the floor for the members of the forum if they would like to make comments before we move on to the special rapporteur on the rights of indigenous peoples. So do any of my colleagues have a comment to make? Yes, please try to be brief also. Thanks, Mr. Hassan Idbal Kasam.
اسمي تمازر فلون سيدتي الرئيسة أود بداية أن أعبر عن ابتهاجي لحضور هذا اللقاء وخصوصا وأننا نتحدث لأول مرة عن تنفيذ الإعلان منذ صدور الإعلان العالمي لحقوق الإنسان كانت السياسة الدولية بشأن الشعوب الأصلية سياسة استيعابية كانت سياسة ترفض الحديث عن الحقوق الجماعية للشعوب الأصلية عن الحقوق المتعلقة باللغات والثقافات والهوية وغيرها ووصلت هذه السياسة الاستيعابية قمتها عند اعتماد اتفاقية منظمة العمل الدولية رقم 107 حينما تحدثت هذه الاتفاقية على أنه من الممكن الاهتمام بحقوق السكان الأصليين في انتظار انقراضهم بسبب عملية التحديث وبسبب عملية عمليات التعليم وبسبب السياسة الاستيعابية التي كانت تمارسها الدول في كل مناطقها من أجل دولة واحدة أمة واحدة ولغة واحدة لكن من حسن الحظ أن الشعوب الأصلية صمدت طويلا وقاومت هذه السياسة الاستيعابية وبدأت المراجعة مع نضالات الشعوب الأصلية وهكذا فإن مراجعة الاتفاقية 169 سنة 1989 في مؤتمر منظمة العمل الدولية أدى إلى بداية مراجعة هذه السياسة الاستيعابية والتفكير في حقوق الشعوب الأصلية بصفتها شعوبا موجودة ومستمرة ولم تخضع لسياسات الاستيعابية ولم تنهزم أمام السياسات الاستيعابية وإن اعتماد إعلان حقوق الشعوب الأصلية كان في الواقع انتصارا كما سبق ذكره انتصارا للشعوب الأصلية على هذه السياسة الاستيعابية ضد الدولة الأمة بالمنطوق بالمفهوم الهيمني الذي ينكر على هذه الشعوب وجودها وحقوقها. طبعا إن اعتماد هذا الإعلان يستلزم الآن أن نفكر جميعا في أهمية تطبيقه وأن نفكر كذلك في طبيعته. هناك من يقول إن إعلان الأمم المتحدة للشعوب الأصلية غير ملزم، وهناك من يرى أنه ملزم. إذا رجعنا إلى إعلان العالمي لحقوق الإنسان، كانت هناك دول صوتت ضد هذا الإعلان، ولكن جاءت اتفاقيات سنة 1966 بشأن الحقوق المدنية والسياسية والتزمت بها الدول، قليلاً لم يلتزم، ولكن هذه الدول لم تعمل على أن تمتع أفراد الشعوب الأصلية حتى من الحقوق الفردية في طبقاً للاتفاقيات التي تمت المصادقة عليها. وإلى الآن في أغلب بلدان العالم فإن أفراد الشعوب الأصلية لا يتمتعون بالحقوق الفردية بصفة عامة، وليس هناك ما يلزم هذه الدول، رغم أن هذه الاتفاقيات ملزمة، لأن في النهاية ليس هناك أي قوة يمكن أن تلزم الدولة بتنفيذ الاتفاقيات. سيدتي الرئيسة، إذن أعتقد أنا شخصيا أنه من الأهمية بمكان أن ننظر إلى أن الإعلان له طبيعة ملزمة من نوع خاص. لماذا؟ لأن هذا الإعلان هو الإعلان الوحيد الذي تم تحريره، ولأول مرة في تاريخ الأمم المتحدة، في إطار مفاوضات بين الدول ومنظمات وحكومات والحكومات بين الشعوب الأصلية والأمم الأصلية وبين الحكومات لمدة هذه المفاوضات استغرقت 10 سنوات. فإذا من الأهمية بمكان أن نعتبر أن أي نص في هذا الاتفاق، وخصوصا وأن الفصل الأول يحيل على أن بمقتضى هذا الإعلان الشعوب الأصلية تتمتع بكل الحقوق المنصوص عليها في القانون الدولي والمنصوص عليها في الاتفاقيات الدولية. إذن سيدتي الرئيسة، أود فقط أن أنتهي بشكري لفريق الخبراء الذين درسوا هذا الإعلان وقدموا توصيات هامة. شكرا سيدتي الرئيسة.
Thank you very much, Hassan Idwal Qassam. I now call on my colleague Tonya Gunella Frischner. You have the floor, Tonya.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to thank our distinguished colleague, Karsten Smith, for his excellent paper that gave us such guidance during our discussion of Article 42. Madam Chair, I am asking your patience because I would like to reserve my comments and would like to hear from our special rapporteur, James Anaya, from Her Excellency Ambassador Erica Diaz, from the Indigenous Peoples Caucus as well as the North American Caucus, and other distinguished speakers, particularly regarding the formulation of the task team in regards to Article 42 before I make my final statement. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Tanya Gunilla Frischner. I'd like to call on Carlos Mamani Konduri. You have the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. También agradecer al relator del taller de expertos sobre la declaración y los comentarios del colega Karsten Smith. Quería referirme al proceso que vivimos en nuestra región y especialmente en Bolivia, por cuanto la aplicación de la declaración de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas por las Naciones Unidas ha llevado a un proceso en el caso particular de los pueblos indígenas a la descolonización, por cuanto hasta antes de la declaración los pueblos indígenas no habían tenido derechos reconocidos ni por los estados ni por el sistema internacional. Entonces, la adopción y la aplicación de los derechos que reconoce la declaración ha llevado a pensar en un nuevo concepto, por ejemplo, de Estado distinto al antiguo Estado nacional, que es ahora el concepto de Estado plurinacional, que no solamente se discute en los congresos nacionales de cada uno de nuestros países, sino también en otros foros mundiales como el pasado Foro Social Mundial en el Brasil. Y esto es un nuevo concepto que va a llevar a nuevas relaciones entre pueblos indígenas, Estado y otros grupos culturales. Por otro lado, pensando en lo que nos acaba de señalar Carsten Smith, la declaración no solamente debe ser visto como la norma suprema del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas, sino es la norma suprema para el conjunto de los pueblos indígenas, que en ese estamos obligados a aplicar la declaración, y esa aplicación debe mostrarse en la reconstitución de nuestros órganos de gobierno, de nuestros territorios, y creo que los obligados a aplicar la declaración somos entonces el Foro Permanente para los pueblos indígenas, como además ya se ha señalado, y el conjunto de los pueblos indígenas aquí presentes y los que no están. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, my dear colleague Carlos Mamani Konduri. I would like now to call on the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous people, Mr. James Anaya, to take his seat, and also the representative, the member of the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous people, Jose Carlos Morales, to also come in front and take his seat. We will now hear a report from our distinguished colleague, the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous peoples, and also later on from the member of the expert mechanism on indigenous peoples' rights. Mr. James Anaya, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, representatives of indigenous peoples and member states, friends and colleagues. Allow me to begin by congratulating you, Madam Chair, person on your re-election to preside over this important work, the work of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Your strong leadership and devotion to indigenous peoples has been a great asset to the Forum, and I'm confident that it will continue to be. Allow me also to acknowledge the many indigenous representatives who are here and thank them for their continued struggle. I know that many have traveled from very far to attend this session. Their efforts are the driving force behind the work of all of the United Nations mechanisms and programs that deal with indigenous issues. I want to also acknowledge the role of the UN Voluntary Fund in making possible the participation of many of the indigenous representatives here, and to encourage states and others to contribute to the Voluntary Fund. I'm grateful for the opportunity to address the Permanent Forum and all those attending this session in order to share some of my experiences during my first year as Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples. Now, this has been a year of continual challenges in my work, with my optimism for a better future for indigenous peoples animated by positive developments in many places, yet tempered by the reality of ongoing struggles and violations of indigenous peoples' human rights across the globe. Madam Chairperson, my participation here is a fundamental part of the necessary cooperation between the Permanent Forum and my mandate as Special Rapporteur. The Human Rights Council has explicitly called upon me to work in close cooperation with the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and to participate in its annual session. Now, this cooperation now extends as well to the Council's expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous peoples, which had its first session last October. As you are aware, Madam Chairperson, in my capacity as Special Rapporteur, I participated in a seminar in Madrid in February with members of the expert mechanism and four members of the permanent forum, along with other experts. This seminar was to explore ways to coordinate and streamline the work of the three mechanisms in order to maximize our collective impact and avoid unnecessary duplication. I would like to acknowledge and express my gratitude for the support provided for this seminar by the International Work Group on Indigenous Affairs, Almaciga Intercultural Work Group, and the Spanish Agency for International Cooperation and Development of the Government of Spain for its support for this seminar. The report of the seminar, which includes a series of recommendations, is being circulated here at the forum, I understand, and will be available also on my website. I'm eager to continue to cooperate with the Permanent Forum and Expert Mechanism to share work agendas, identify strengths and limitations of our respective mandates, and to channel our work in the way that will make it most effective. While the Permanent Forum, the Expert Mechanism, and I as Special Rapporteur have different roles, a common purpose that joins us, of course, is to advance the human rights of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Clearly, an important point of reference for pursuing this common purpose, as is evident already from the discussions during this week, is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. In my first report to the Human Rights Council last September, I emphasized that the declaration represents the global common understanding about the minimum content of Indigenous peoples' rights, building as it does upon a well-established body of international human rights law. It provides a normative framework for the work of all United Nations institutions and agencies in relation to Indigenous issues, as has just been stressed. By Article 42 of the Declaration itself, the General Assembly calls on all United Nations bodies and agencies to promote respect for and full application of the provisions of the Declaration. And I would add that in its resolution authorizing or reauthorizing the mandate of the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples, the Human Rights Council directs the Special Rapporteur to promote the Declaration in carrying out the work of the mandate. Madam Chairperson, since becoming Special Rapporteur just over a year ago, I have engaged in a range of activities within the terms of my mandate to monitor the human rights conditions of Indigenous peoples worldwide and to promote steps to improve those conditions. Throughout this work, I have attempted to incorporate a gender perspective as well as to be attentive to the particular vulnerabilities of Indigenous children. Overall, I've tried to develop work methods oriented toward constructive dialogue with governments, Indigenous peoples, non-government organizations, relevant UN agencies, and other actors in order to address problem situations and build on advances already made. The various activities I've carried out can be described as falling within four interrelated spheres of activity. A first area of my work follows from the directive given me by the Human Rights Council to identify and promote best practices. I'm working to advance legal, administrative, and programmatic reforms at the domestic level to implement the standards of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and other relevant international instruments. Reform of this kind is no small task, as it is necessarily full of all kinds of complexities and requires a strong commitment, both financial and political, on the part of governments and the United Nations system overall. During my time as Special Rapporteur, I have been asked to provide assistance with constitutional and legislative reform initiatives by providing orientation on how to conform those initiatives to relevant international standards. For example, shortly after assuming my mandate in May 2008, at the request of indigenous organizations and the president of the Constituent Assembly of Ecuador, I provided an analysis of certain indigenous issues arising in the context of that country's constitutional reform process. Similarly, and more recently, I developed a report outlining the international standards that are relevant to consultations with indigenous peoples in connection with constitutional reforms in Chile. I've also been asked by the government of Suriname to help draft a law on indigenous land and resources as part of the implementation of the judgment of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights in the case of Saramaca versus Suriname. I continue to monitor the progress and continue to look at the challenges in each of these countries with respect to the issues I have addressed. Clearly, an important component of efforts to build good practices at the domestic level is a policy of commitment to advance the rights of indigenous peoples in accordance with the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Just recently, as many have already celebrated, Australia officially endorsed the declaration. I believe, Madam Chairperson, this sets an important example for the three other states that did not vote in favor of the declaration when it was adopted by the General Assembly, as well as for those states that abstained in the vote. I am encouraging these other states to take the same action and proclaim unambiguously their support for the declaration, and I am optimistic that they eventually will. A second area of work, which is intended to contribute to good practices in specific countries, involves conducting or participating in studies on issues or themes that are of interest to indigenous peoples across borders and regions of the world. My distinguished predecessor, Professor Rodolfo Stauffenhagen, carried out a number of thematic studies during his time as Special Rapporteur to identify major issues and to provide a foundation for subsequent positive practical action and reform. However, taking into account the creation of the expert mechanism with a mandate to provide thematic expertise and recommendations to the Council and the United Nations system on issues affecting indigenous peoples, I now see my own work carrying out thematic studies as secondary to my other areas of work. My role in this regard will, for the most part, be complementary and supportive of the work of the expert mechanism. In this regard, I have provided information based on my experiences as Special Rapporteur for the expert mechanism's current study on the right of indigenous peoples to education. Apart from this input, I am collaborating with NGOs and indigenous experts in two initiatives related to two thematic areas of recurrent concern to indigenous peoples. One is a seminar on dispute resolution mechanisms in regard to extractive industries operating or seeking to operate within indigenous territories. This seminar and the report it will generate correspond to a recommendation made last year by the Permanent Forum that I carry out a study on transnational corporation. And it is intended to complement the Permanent Forum's own work on this subject. A second initiative is a multifaceted study on legal pluralism and indigenous customary law. Madam Chairperson, a third area of work involves investigating and reporting on the general human rights situations of indigenous peoples and in selected countries. And this indeed is perhaps the most important aspect of my work as Special Rapporteur and certainly the most time-consuming. This involves developing written country reports that include conclusions and recommendations aimed at strengthening good practices, identifying areas of concern, and improving the human rights situations of indigenous peoples. The reporting process typically involves on-site visits to countries under review, during which I interact with government representatives, indigenous communities from different regions, and a cross-section of civil society actors. These on-site visits can only take place with the consent of the government concerned and with the government's cooperation. Over the last year, I have visited Brazil, Nepal, and Botswana to report on these countries, and I have conducted a follow-up visit to Chile to evaluate its progress in implementing the recommendations in the report of my predecessor, Rodolfo Stavenhagen. I also plan on carrying out a follow-up visit sometime in the next few months to Colombia, another country reported on by my predecessor. I will be submitting initial or follow-up reports on each of these countries when I provide my annual update to the Human Rights Council in September. Finally, Madam Chair, the fourth area of my work as Special Rapporteur involves responding on an ongoing basis to specific situations of alleged human rights violations. A fundamental aspect of the mandate of the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples, as reaffirmed in Human Rights Council Resolution 612, is to gather, request, receive, and exchange information and communications from all relevant sources, including governments, Indigenous people, and their communities and organizations, on alleged violations of their human rights and fundamental freedoms. My ability to address specific situations of alleged violations relies to an important extent on the information provided to me by Indigenous peoples and their organizations, NGOs, and other sources. There are no formal requirements for submitting information to the Special Rapporteur. However, it is crucial that the information provided be accurate, complete, and up to date. I would like to take this opportunity, Madam Chairperson, to encourage the Indigenous representatives present at this session of the Permanent Forum to send me information about concerns they are facing in their respective communities. I am circulating or having circulated in the room a brochure that provides guidance on how to submit information to me. Over the past year, I have received information about situations of alleged human rights violations in countries in every continent. And in response, I have sent numerous communications to governments about these situations. These cases involve infringements of the right to free, prior, and informed consent, especially in relation to natural resource extraction and displacement or removal of Indigenous communities, denial of the rights of Indigenous peoples to lands and resources, Indigenous peoples' involuntary isolation, incidents of threats or violence against Indigenous peoples and individuals, and concerns about constitutional or legislative reforms affecting Indigenous peoples, among other situations. Given the limited resources available to me, it is impossible to respond to every case that comes to my attention. But in general, I try to do my best to act on detailed and credible information that presents a serious situation falling within my mandate, in which intervention by me has a reasonable chance of having a positive impact, either by drawing needed attention to the situation or by prompting government authorities or other actors into corrective action. Alternatively, I may take action where the situation is representative of or connected to a broader pattern of human rights violations against Indigenous peoples. The usual first step in taking action on information is to forward it to the government concerned, along with a request that the government respond. In some cases, I've issued public statements calling attention to or expressing concern over the human rights violations alleged. In addition, as I have already done in one case, I may issue observations with analyses and recommendations that I hope will be of use to the governments and Indigenous peoples concerned in their efforts to address the situation. Summaries of the communications, together with summaries of the government responses, if any, and observations I may make on the situations addressed, are included in my annual reports to the Council. In all my work as Special Rapporteur, I want to be proactive in efforts to prevent human rights violations from arising or escalating. These efforts require active engagement with governments, Indigenous peoples, and other actors to closely monitor and evaluate situations, identify underlying causes of immediate problems, promote specific action that builds upon advances already made, and develop recommendations that are practical, well-founded in available knowledge and in accordance with relevant international human rights standards. I want to take this opportunity to thank the many indigenous peoples, governments, United Nations bodies and agencies, NGOs, and others that have cooperated with me in this regard. Madam Chairperson, let me conclude by saying that in my first year as Special Rapporteur, I've been developing my work methods to be as effective as possible in carrying out my mandate to promote the human rights of Indigenous peoples. I will continue to collaborate with the Permanent Forum, the expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous peoples themselves, and others to promote the full implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and to find solutions to the problems Indigenous peoples face in the enjoyment of their fundamental human rights. Toward this end, I am committed to working to ensure that Indigenous peoples' voices are effectively heard and to facilitate constructive dialogue among all concerned. I would like to close my remarks by reaffirming here my strong commitment to my role as Special Rapporteur, acknowledging with humility the responsibility it represents, and thanking all those who have supported me and continue to support me in this work. I thank you for your kind attention.
I'd like to thank warmly Professor James Anaya, the Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples. I would like now to call on Jose Carlos Morales, a member of the Expert Mechanism, the Vice Chairman of the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Mr. Morales, you have the floor.
Señora Presidenta, distinguidos miembros del Foro Permanente, distinguidas delegaciones de los estados, distinguidos delegados de los pueblos indígenas y observadores, señoras y señores, primero que todo, quiero adherirme para felicitar a la Presidenta por su elección para esta octava sesión del Foro Permanente. Seguidamente, manifestarle, señora Presidenta, que es para mí un privilegio presentar al mecanismo de expertos sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas del Consejo de Derechos Humanos por primera vez ante este foro. Agradecemos la invitación de su Presidenta para estar presentes en esta sesión. Según la resolución 636, el Consejo crea el mecanismo subsidiario de expertos en diciembre del 2007 para proporcionarle al Consejo los conocimientos temáticos especializados sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas de la manera y forma en que el Consejo lo solicite. Según su mandato, los conocimientos especializados temáticos se enfocarán principalmente en estudios y asesoramiento basado en la investigación. También el mecanismo puede presentar propuestas para que el Consejo las examine y las apruebe. El mecanismo de expertos celebró su primera sesión del 1 al 3 de octubre del 2008 en Ginebra. Para la primera sesión se acreditaron 368 participantes. La mayor parte fueron delegados de organizaciones indígenas. Sin duda, esta sesión marca el desarrollo de una nueva etapa para el tratamiento de la promoción y protección de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas del mundo. Se centró en dos temas las discusiones de esta primera sesión, según lo solicitado por el Consejo en la resolución 9/7. Primero, proporcionar recomendaciones al Comité Preparatorio de la revisión de la Conferencia de Durban, la que se celebró en octubre del 2008 en Ginebra. Segundo, preparar un estudio sobre las lecciones aprendidas y los retos a realizar en la implementación del derecho de los pueblos indígenas a la educación, el cual será terminado en el 2009. Que propusieron, además, para el estudio sobre el derecho a la educación, recientemente se realizó un seminario de expertos en Ginebra, el cual tuvo buena contribución previa y durante el seminario por parte de los estados, ONGs, organizaciones indígenas y órganos de las Naciones Unidas, demostrando las lecciones aprendidas, tanto positivas como negativas, en los pueblos indígenas. El informe será presentado en agosto próximo para su discusión final ante la segunda sesión del mecanismo y luego someterlo al Consejo de Derechos Humanos. En esta sesión del mecanismo y según su mandato, se decidió el método de trabajo, así como los futuros temas a considerar basado en el marco conceptual que brinda la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, la resolución de la Asamblea General 61295. Para el desarrollo futuro de los conocimientos temáticos, es necesario una debida coordinación y cooperación entre el mecanismo, el relator especial sobre la situación de los derechos humanos y las libertades fundamentales de los indígenas y el foro permanente para las cuestiones indígenas. Los ejes temáticos propuestos para la futura sesión fueron apoyados por los participantes de los pueblos indígenas, los que propusieron además una larga lista de temas, incluyendo derechos establecidos en la declaración como la libre determinación, tratados, tierras, territorios y recursos y otros. Como se observó, el mecanismo se enfrenta a grandes retos en su trabajo futuro. Una propuesta de resolución presentada al Consejo para que fuera sometido a la Asamblea General fue la ampliación del mandato del Fondo Voluntario para que los delegados indígenas puedan participar en las sesiones del mecanismo e incluso en la sesión del propio Consejo y órganos de tratados para cuando se discuta el tema de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Como resultado, vemos que la Asamblea General, en su 63ª sesión, aprobó ampliar el mandato de dicho fondo para facilitar la participación a las sesiones del mecanismo de expertos sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, conforme a la propuesta sugerida por el mecanismo. Invitamos a los estados a apoyar con mayores recursos al fondo voluntario. Señora Presidenta, para el mecanismo de expertos es muy importante y de interés atender las propuestas sobre los ejes temáticos para su análisis o estudio que vienen del sentir de los pueblos indígenas y también de los propios estados o apoyados por estos, lo que permitirá el avance práctico sobre los derechos de nuestros pueblos ya reconocidos en la declaración, siendo una contribución efectiva al trabajo crítico del Consejo de Derechos Humanos en la promoción y protección de los derechos humanos en general. El presidente del mecanismo, John Erickson, presentó el informe de nuestra primera sesión el 17 de marzo del 2009 ante el Consejo de Derechos Humanos, documento del Consejo A/HRC/1056. Aunque el informe y sus recomendaciones no han sido aprobados oficialmente, los comentarios de la mayoría de los estados son positivos para este primer informe. Señora Presidenta, la segunda sesión del mecanismo tendrá lugar del 10 al 14 de agosto del presente año y tiene como marco conceptual de trabajo la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Se ha propuesto un programa provisional al Consejo para tratar, entre otros, dos temas fundamentales. Primero, el estudio sobre las lecciones aprendidas y la implementación sobre el derecho de los pueblos indígenas a la educación. Será la presentación del estudio. Segundo, sobre los siguientes temas de la declaración. A. Implementación de la declaración a nivel regional y a nivel nacional. B. El tema de la adjudicación, reparación, repatriación, restitución y compensación. En este sentido, se invita a los pueblos indígenas, a los gobiernos, a las ONGs y otros a participar a la segunda sesión del mecanismo de expertos sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, a dar su aporte sobre estos temas en la segunda sesión del mecanismo, en particular enviando contribuciones escritas a la Secretaría del Mecanismo antes del 15 de julio del 2009. Adicionalmente, se celebrará el Día Internacional de los Pueblos Indígenas del Mundo en el primer día de la segunda sesión del mecanismo, el 10 de agosto, ya que el Día Internacional ocurre el domingo 9 de agosto. El mecanismo es un nuevo órgano en el seno del Consejo de Derechos Humanos, como lo establece la resolución 6/36. Hay que hacer un mayor esfuerzo de coordinación entre los tres órganos referidos a los derechos humanos y de los pueblos indígenas de las Naciones Unidas. El mecanismo propiamente, el relator especial sobre la situación de los derechos humanos y las libertades fundamentales de los indígenas y el foro permanente para las cuestiones indígenas. En este sentido, en el mes de febrero, como bien lo mencionaba acá el relator especial, tuvimos un seminario internacional en Madrid, España, entre los expertos y expertas, incluyendo a representantes de los tres mecanismos con mandatos específicos para discutir el papel de cada uno. Un ejemplo concreto de esta colaboración es la organización durante nuestra sesión de reuniones formales del relator especial con representantes indígenas presentes a nuestra sesión. Que quisiera someter una comunicación sobre alegaciones de violaciones de sus derechos. El seminario fue iniciativa del profesor Bartolomé Clavero, miembro del Foro Permanente sobre los Asuntos Indígenas, el profesor Jim Anaya, relator especial de las Naciones Unidas, auspiciado por la Agencia Española de Cooperación Internacional para el Desarrollo, la AICIT, organizado por el Grupo Intercultural Almáciga e IFGUIA. El objetivo de la reunión fue promover un diálogo informal entre los tres mecanismos con vista a incrementar la coordinación de sus trabajos, así como la labor con otros órganos y agencias de las Naciones Unidas. La reunión fue atendida por representantes de los secretariados de los tres mecanismos, así como un grupo de expertos de las diferentes regiones, incluyendo al exrelator especial, señor Stavenhagen, todos en su capacidad personal como expertos en derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Por la condición de diálogo informal del seminario, fue una oportunidad única de intercambio de experiencia y análisis con el objetivo de encontrar vías de interacción y cooperación para una mayor eficiencia de los tres mecanismos de las Naciones Unidas. En conclusión, la base de trabajo de los tres mecanismos es la complementariedad. Se proponen varias recomendaciones para consideraciones futuras y esta práctica debe ser oficializada ante los órganos correspondientes de las Naciones Unidas. Reconocemos el apoyo de la Oficina del Alto Comisionado para los Derechos Humanos, para el Mecanismo de Expertos, que por supuesto necesita reforzarse más para desempeñar de mejor manera nuestra labor sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en las diferentes regiones del mundo. Agradecemos el apoyo económico del Gobierno de Noruega para el mecanismo en su momento inicial, al no contar con presupuesto y poder atender al menos las reuniones más importantes del sistema de las Naciones Unidas referidas a pueblos indígenas. tal como la del foro en esta oportunidad. De lo contrario, no hubiera sido posible estar presente en esta octava sesión. Invitamos a otros gobiernos y agencias para reforzar este apoyo tan necesario para nuestro trabajo como expertos del mecanismo. Finalmente, señora presidenta, deseo expresar una cordial bienvenida a los gobiernos de Australia y Colombia por su decisión de adoptar y respaldar de manera unilateral la declaración recientemente. Esto reforzará una mejor relación entre los pueblos indígenas con dichos estados. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, the Vice Chair of the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Jose Carlos Morales. So you have heard the different bodies now of the United Nations that are addressing the situation of indigenous peoples. And we would like to open now the speakers list, go to our speakers list, and we hope you will engage in a dialogue also with the experts that we have with us today. But before I call on the, I'll open the list, I just would like to call on my distinguished colleague, Pei Mane Haste, who has a brief comment to make. You have the floor, Pei Mane.
Thank you. Madam Chair, through you, I'd like to thank both the speakers, distinguished guests, for their great presentations. I appreciate it very much. I have some questions to Dr. Anaya. I enjoyed listening to your presentations, and I am looking forward to see the report that you will be submitting to the Human Rights Council in September, hopefully. I am sure it is going to be very useful, not only for those regions that you have visited, but for other areas of the world which are facing almost the same problems as well. I have two kinds of questions, if I can pose, to Dr. Anaya. I go straight to the questions. What have you faced as the main challenges in your work and your mandates, either from member states or UN system or even indigenous communities, the main challenges? As you know, for instance, some states, they refer to this as a declaration and not a convention, so they kind of distinguish or distinct it from kind of that sort of binding, so they may not react to it the same as they do to the conventions. That could be just like one thing that I was thinking, if you have experienced any kind of difficulties or any kind of ambiguity in that regard. The second question is that what kind of coordination or collaboration have you or do you get with the other special rapporteurs working with the High Commissioner's Office or Secretariat? Because as we all know, there are a lot of shared and or overlapping, not overlapping, but kind of shared experiences or issues with other special rapporteurs, such as the right to development, right to food, rights of migrants, rights of minorities, violence against women, and so on. Have you, I'd like to get your idea on if it is going to be possible to some sort of mainstream the issue of indigenous people in all aspects of the work of the High Commissioner's Special Rapporteurs or the Human Rights Council Special Rapporteurs, because in every human rights issues that we touch, there are this group. It's sort of like how we have mainstream gender into all aspects of the thematic issues and all aspects of the human rights issues. Do you see it very far away from having this done, or do you see that as a challenge again, or any possibilities? It is very effective and very important that we have a special rapporteur on indigenous issues. But I also feel that in many or in several special rapporteurs' visits to country visits, there should really be the special rapporteur on indigenous issues accompanying them. I mean, going together, because we can get more in-depth views from those communities. I just wanted to see how your views are. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much, Peymane. If you can address that briefly, Jim, and then we will move to the speakers list.
Thank you for those questions. As for the main challenges, time and resources, of course, but we all know what that's about. From states, more cooperation in terms of setting dates for country missions, in terms of responding to my request for information about allegations of human rights violations, that could be improved upon, and that is a challenge, to try to get the level of cooperation that I think is really needed for the mechanism to work effectively. That said, I do want to acknowledge that states have cooperated. Many states have cooperated in exemplary ways with me on my work, both in setting dates for and executing country missions, as well as in engaging in a dialogue over specific allegations of human rights violations, and I want to acknowledge that and thank those governments that have. But that does continue to be a challenge to get states to be responsive. Within the UN system, works with a number of special rapporteurs and special procedures and has a number of work methods that are set in place. I've been working with the UN system, with the Office of High Commissioner in particular, to adapt to the particular needs of my mandate and to allow for the kind of flexibility that is required for me to execute my work effectively, in my opinion. And the Office of High Commissioner has cooperated with me on that and allowing the kind of flexibility that is needed that allows for adaptation away from the standard work methods applicable to special procedures mandate holders in general, and I want to acknowledge that. Coordination and collaboration with other mandate holders and other aspects of the UN system. It is not uncommon for me to issue joint communications to governments with other mandate holders and where an issue comes up that concerns both our respective mandates. I try to always have a reason for me to join in a joint communication, not simply to join in any communication that happens to involve an indigenous individual or an indigenous people. I see my mandate as really having to do with indigenous issues, focused primarily on the collective rights such as those that are affirmed in the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I think indigenous people's human rights of course, like any other individuals and indigenous peoples are protected by all the human rights standards that exist, and so all the special procedures mandate holders need to have indigenous people individual in mind when they in executing their mandates. I fully endorse that concept. As far as joint visits, that's not something I've done yet. I understand other mandate holders have, but it's something that I have discussed with one or two. I think that there's a lot of interesting possibilities there. Again, we're faced with resource constraints in that respect, but I do think that could be a creative way of looking at issues and helping to mainstream issues throughout the UN system on human rights concerns.
Thank you very much, Jim. I would just like to say that actually there was this meeting in October in India where there was a hearing on violence against indigenous women, and Mr. Anaya, the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women, Yakin Erturk, and myself were present in that event. And I think that is a good practice of how to link up the different mechanisms. My dear colleagues, I would like to call you both, but you know, we have 80 speakers in the list. We only have 4 hours and 15 minutes left. I will call you at the middle. So please bear with me while I will start calling the speakers list, because we will never be able to get through this, but I would like to first call on the speakers list, and then at some point I will call both of you, okay? Mr. Clavero and Ms. Lokaoa. I would like now to call on the speakers list. I open the speakers list, and I would first like to call on the indigenous peoples. I'll call 2, and then I'll call 2 from the governments and 2 from the agencies, and then we'll move around. So the first speaker on my list is Eleanor Bangwa, who is speaking on behalf of the Asian Indigenous Women's Network. I'm also urging you all to stick to 3 minutes, because we will never be able to get through 80 speakers with the hours that we have. So Eleanor Bangwa, are you in the room? Yes, you have the floor. 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Asian Indigenous Women's Network have been engaged in the last year facilitating building capacities of Indigenous women to hold governments accountable using CEDAW. With the support of the UNIFEM CEDAW SIA program based in Bangkok. And we would like to present some of the findings, the following situation of Indigenous women in the Asian region, which were surfaced during the activities. Indigenous women suffer disproportionately from the impacts of development aggression, including the current initiatives to curb climate change. Displacement of indigenous communities by extractive industries has increased women's economic dependence on men, who are equally compelled to find other income sources. Secondly, as women stand up against this violence, their human rights and freedoms are threatened. Strategic lawsuits against public participation have been used to silence indigenous women and community leaders. Intolerance prevails. Gender discrimination persists, inhibiting women from asserting their full development as human beings. Factors predisposing this includes inheritance practices, arranged and early marriages, among others. This is further complicated by women's complacency and internalized discrimination, resulting from the lack of opportunities and capacities for women to address or challenge their situations. From these situations, we have the following recommendations. 1, continuing support to fully enable Indigenous women's organizations to strengthen present capacities to monitor and implement the implementation of the CEDAW at the national level as an enabling process for Indigenous women to effectively engage with national, regional, and international machineries for women, the CEDAW mechanisms, and other human rights bodies. On this note, strengthen current initiatives to inform Indigenous women of their human rights, mobilize technical, logistical, and expert resources to equip and enable Indigenous women to be able to use the different human rights mechanisms, tools, and procedures towards the fulfillment of their rights to equality and non-discrimination, and ensure information and communication of national CEDAW implementation, including consultations with Indigenous women's organizations to define specific fulfillment of their rights. To define specific approaches, rather, and strategies that would be most appropriate in their context. We also call for the different women-related processes in the UN, like the Commission on the Status of Women, the Committee, the CEDAW, and funding mechanisms, the UNIFEM, through its regional sub-regional offices to strengthen their work on the particular situations of the rights and freedoms of Indigenous women, through the institutionalized adoption of the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as a minimum standard in the fulfillment and enjoyment of the rights by Indigenous women. Finally, we call for the Permanent Forum support to the 3rd Asian Indigenous Women's Conference in October this year, which will discuss, among other things, domestic violence and violence in the name of culture and tradition, trafficking and prostitution, and climate change vis-a-vis the situations of indigenous women. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Eleanor Bangwa of the Asian Indigenous Women's Network. I now call on Lino Vilca, who is from the Parlamento Indígena de América in Bolivia. Is Lino Vilca in the room? Yes, yes, you have the floor. And after him, I will call on the representative of Brazil. Yes, Mr. Vilca, you have the floor.
Señora Presidenta, primeramente agradecer por invitar este evento. En segundo lugar, agradecer a todos los miembros del Abya Yala y del mundo, agradecer el apoyo permanente a nuestro hermano Evo Morales, presidente constitucional de nuestro Bolivia, que permanente apoyo hemos recibido, aquello nos congratula con mucha fuerza. En segundo lugar, a los pueblos indígenas, propiamente en Bolivia, hemos sido permanente vulnerados nuestros derechos. Y quiero referirme, primeramente, la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, aprobado, que nuevamente hacer conocer que muchos miembros que han llegado en Bolivia es la ley de la República. Y otro, quiero mencionar a un líder de los pueblos indígenas, decía, siendo dueños de nuestra tierra y territorio, andamos como extranjeros, en el cual estos días hemos venido viviendo, escuchando muchos reclamos, nuestros derechos. En ese entendido, como pueblo de Bolivia, primeramente queremos ratificar la carta que ha emanado, presentada en la Viena en pasados meses, con el respeto y la masticación de la hoja de coca, que es una práctica ancestral milenaria de los pueblos indígenas y andinos, que en el cual las naciones o la ONU nos han prohibido de masticar y acullicar, y aquello que puede ser sacado de las listas de estupefacientes, en el cual que nos va a permitir ese derecho de los pueblos indígenas en su praxis cotidiana y ritualidad. En segundo lugar, también queremos hacer mención el pueblo de Bolivia, en su proceso constituyente y su aprobación, que ha sido significativo y también ha sido generado violento de los grupos de poderes a este sector social que somos los pueblos indígenas. La discriminación permanente a las mujeres de pollera, inclusive gritándonos indios, razas malditas y aquellos de grupos de poder. Inclusive el 24 de mayo se recuerda en Bolivia un día de racismo en el cual casi cerca de 100 hermanos indígenas ha sido desnudado, semidesnudo, ha sido quemado sus banderas por los grupos de poder. Es un agravio permanente aquello que se vive. Y otro año pasado, el 11 de septiembre, en el cual el gran genocidio, yo diría, por los grupos de poder, prefecto Leopoldo Fernández, en el cual ha sido genocidado una lista humana, casi de 20 personas han sido acribilladas. Y también queremos hacer conocer y denunciar los, inclusive los ONGs o como USAID, en los Estados Unidos mismos han sido capaces de generar violencia y dirigir a balcanizar a nuestro país, inclusive para poder llevar, inclusive jugarse con la vida de nuestro hermano Evo Morales. Y para concluir, que esta parte quiero mencionar, también hay líderes indígenas y somos también víctimas de todo aquello, los líderes indígenas que son, que se han alineado a la derecha, y eso ha sido nuestra derrota permanente que hoy tenemos en Bolivia, como ser Víctor Hugo Cárdenas, un líder indígena, pero muy incorporado a la derecha, a los grupos de poder que hoy permanente renuncian también que ese grupo de poder toman aquello. Con estas pequeñas palabras agradezco y muchas gracias a este foro de los pueblos indígenas que hoy estamos llevando.
Thank you very much. Yes, we have seen some of the situations that you have described and also heard those stories when we had our visit to Bolivia. So thank you very much for that. I'd like now to call on the representative of the observer government of Brazil, Mr. Marcio Augusto Freitas de Meira. You have the floor, sir.
Merci, Madame la Présidente. Du point de vue du Brésil, l'approbation de la Déclaration universelle des Nations unies sur le droit des peuples indigènes représente un pas de grande importance pour la protection de la diversité culturelle des peuples indigènes dans le cadre international et dans les divers continents. La déclaration trouve appui dans la Constitution fédérale brésilienne et la Convention 169 de l'Organisation internationale du travail. Ces préceptes, donc, sont déjà en application dans le pays. Depuis 2001, le Brésil a présenté une invitation permanente aux rapporteurs spéciaux des Nations Unies pour visiter le Brésil. En août 2008, le Brésil a eu l'honneur de recevoir la visite du rapporteur spécial des Nations Unies pour le droit de l'homme et des libertés fondamentales, M. James Anaya. Durant la visite, plusieurs contacts ont été faits avec les représentants d'institutions publiques, la FUNAI, le ministère de la Justice, le secrétariat spécial des droits de l'homme, le ministère de l'Éducation, la Fondation nationale de la santé, le ministère public fédéral et d'organisations indigènes, la coordination des organisations indigènes de l'Amazonie brésilienne, la Fédération des organisations indigènes du Haut Rio Negro, le Conseil indigène de Roraima et les communautés indigènes de São Gabriel da Cachoeira, les Yanomami, les indigènes de la terre indigène Raposa Serra do Sol et aussi les Guarani, Kaiowá du Mato Grosso do Sul ont également été visités. La visite du rapporteur a été reçue avec expectative pour que les politiques dirigées vers les peuples indigènes soient évaluées, pour que l'État améliore sa politique et consolide les organes publics qui agissent dans ce domaine. Le Brésil profite de cette occasion pour remercier cette visite et attend la publication de ce rapport qui apportera certainement d'importantes contributions à la politique indigéniste brésilienne. Très bien, merci, madame.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marcio Augusto Freitas de Meira from Brazil. I'd like to call now on the representative of the observer government of Venezuela, Ms. Moira Mendez.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Antushi hia tawalayu hupushua. Hermanos y hermanas indígenas de las Américas y del mundo, representantes de los pueblos originarios, verdaderos amantes de la naturaleza, de su hábitat, de su armonía y buen convivir, comprometidos siempre con la conservación de la madre tierra. En nombre de la República Bolivariana de Venezuela, bienvenidos sean a las Naciones Unidas. La República Bolivariana de Venezuela se presenta una vez más en este foro para entablar un diálogo constructivo con los representantes de los pueblos y comunidades indígenas del mundo, para escuchar sus clamores y denuncias, pero también para celebrar con ellos la conquista de algunos de sus derechos originarios que injustamente les han sido arrebatados. El gobierno socialista y revolucionario que preside el presidente de la República Bolivariana de Venezuela, Hugo Chávez Frías, se solidariza con sus problemas, con los que han planteado en este y anteriores foros, y se compromete con la lucha emprendida por los pueblos indígenas por la reivindicación plena de sus derechos colectivos. Nuestro país se presenta humildemente en este foro no con la intención de hacer alarde de los importantes logros alcanzados en Venezuela en materia de reconocimiento de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, pues estamos conscientes que 10 años de gobierno revolucionario no son suficientes para reivindicar todos los derechos que les han sido regados en los últimos 516 años. La Constitución de la República Bolivariana de Venezuela de 1999, aprobada 8 años antes de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, establece una sociedad democrática, multiétnica, multilingüe y pluricultural. La Constitución Bolivariana, que ha sido traducido a varios idiomas indígenas, consagra un capítulo exclusivo a los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, en el que se reconoce su existencia, su organización social, política y económica, sus culturas, usos y costumbres, su medicina tradicional, sus idiomas y religiones, así como su hábitat y derechos originarios sobre las tierras que ancestral y tradicionalmente ocupan y que son necesarias para desarrollar y garantizar sus formas de vida. Se reconoce el derecho a la propiedad colectiva de sus tierras y se establece que la demarcación de las mismas se realizará con la participación directa de los pueblos indígenas. Estos derechos constitucionales han sido desarrollados en diversas leyes, entre ellas la Ley Orgánica de Pueblos y Comunidades Indígenas de 2005 y la Ley de Demarcación y Garantía del Hábitat y Tierras de los Pueblos Indígenas del 2001. Constituye un hecho histórico que tan solo para el 2005 se hayan logrado otorgar títulos de propiedad por una superficie de 794.097 hectáreas a varias poblaciones indígenas del país. La demarcación aún continúa, nos queda mucho por hacer. Para concluir, debemos tener presente, quisiera hacer mención a la creación también del Ministerio del Poder Popular para los Pueblos Indígenas y las misiones sociales bolivarianas, Huacaipuro, Madres del Barrio, educativas de tipo educativa de Robinson, Sucre, Rivas, Misión de Salud, Barrio Adentro, etcétera, que han beneficiado a las poblaciones indígenas del país. Para concluir, debemos tener presente que los derechos, que los seres humanos no somos dueños de la naturaleza, sino parte de ella, por lo que debemos aprender a respetarla y a vivir en armonía y paz con nuestra madre tierra. El actual sistema capitalista mundial, a través de sus distintas expresiones, como lo son el consumismo desmedido, el desgaste de los recursos naturales que conllevan a la destrucción de la biodiversidad, la transculturalización de los pueblos, que implica borrar nuestra esencia, la pérdida de nuestros valores ancestrales indígenas y la negación de la existencia de nuestros pueblos originarios, constituye la más terrible amenaza que se cierne sobre la vida y la existencia de nuestro planeta. Para la República Bolivariana de Venezuela, la construcción del socialismo del siglo XXI sobre la base del socialismo indoamericano, basado en los principios de solidaridad, reciprocidad, justicia social, igualdad, complementariedad y armonía con la naturaleza, constituye una alternativa para salvar al planeta del voraz neoliberalismo salvaje. A los pueblos y comunidades indígenas del mundo, les brindamos nuestro apoyo para impulsar la aplicación efectiva de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. En Venezuela encontrarán un gobierno aliado para continuar la lucha por la reivindicación de sus derechos ancestrales. Patria, socialismo o muerte, venceremos.
Can you please conclude now? Thank you. Thank you very much, the representative of the observer government of Venezuela. I'd like now to call on the representative of the International Labor Organization, Ms. Birgitte Fiering, and after her, the representative of ECLAC. You have the floor, Ms. Fiering.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples marked a milestone in the struggle to ensure equality for Indigenous peoples. The Director General of the ILO and the ILO Committee of Experts have welcomed the adoption of the declaration, which reaffirms the rights contained in ILO Convention No. 169, while also reflecting the evolving nature of international law by recognizing rights not covered by the convention, including the right to self-determination. While Convention No. 169 is silent on the issue of self-determination, it does, however, provide for participation, consultation, self-management, and the right of indigenous peoples to decide their own priorities, all of which are important mechanisms for the realization of the right to self-determination as reflected in the declaration. Also, it is important to note that Convention No. 169 does not place limitations on the right to self-determination or any other obligations that states may have under the broader body of international law regarding indigenous peoples. Article 35 of the Convention specifically clarifies that the application of the Convention shall not adversely affect more favorable rights granted at the national level or through international instruments. Convention No. 169 and the UN Declaration are thus compatible and mutually reinforcing, and ratification of the Convention is an important contribution to the implementation of the Declaration. In this regard, it was symbolic that Nepal ratified the Convention on the 14th of September 2007, just one day after the adoption of the Declaration by the General Assembly. Since then, Chile has joined the group of ratifying countries, and the ILO is aware of and is supporting a series of initiatives all over the world to promote further ratifications. One particular advantage that ratification brings is the access to institutionalized supervisory mechanisms, which regularly monitor progress and also serve to clarify and guide implementation in cases of dispute and disagreement between indigenous peoples and states. Given the fact that the implementation process of the two instruments is largely one and the same, experiences generated so far in the context of Convention 169 can also serve to inspire the further efforts to implement the declaration. Therefore, the ILO is pleased to inform the forum about a series of new publications which hopefully will serve as practical tools for the implementation of Indigenous peoples' rights. These publications include a practice guide based on the experiences, good practices and lessons learned, a compilation of case law from national and international tribunals in Latin America, and finally an overview report on the constitutional, legislative and administrative provisions concerning indigenous peoples in Africa. It is my pleasure to inform you that this overview report was adopted last Saturday by the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, and it is our hope this will help advance the discussion and further support indigenous peoples in the African region where they are facing particularly severe situations of exclusion and marginalization. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Birgitte Feiring, representative of the ILO, and also of the news that you have said about the adoption by the African Commission on Peoples and Human Rights of the tools that you have developed. Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Ms. Fabiana Del Popolo, a representative of Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, ECLAC. Yes, you have the floor, madam.
Muchas gracias. Distinguidos miembros del foro permanente y distinguidos participantes. Agradecemos la invitación que tan gentilmente nos hiciera el Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas y que nos permite nuevamente participar en su periodo de sesiones. Durante los últimos 12 meses, las actividades del CELADE, que es la División de Población de la Comisión Económica para América Latina y el Caribe, se ha regido por su programa de trabajo bienal y por las resoluciones aprobadas por el Comité Especial de Población y Desarrollo durante sus periodos de sesiones. En estas resoluciones se solicitaba que se siguiera dando prioridad a 7 temas. 2 de ellos son pueblos indígenas y la Ronda 2010 de Censos de Población y Vivienda y Estadísticas Vitales. La inclusión de los pueblos indígenas en los censos y otras fuentes de datos se ha seguido consolidando como un eje importante del trabajo del CELADE, en tanto la información constituye una valiosa herramienta de promoción de los derechos humanos. Asimismo, los artículos 15 y 16 de la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas establecen los estándares mínimos en materia de información. Durante el 2008 se ha avanzado en la investigación sociodemográfica de pueblos indígenas mediante la elaboración de estudios técnicos que incluyen recomendaciones a los estados bajo una perspectiva de derechos. Esto se detalla en el informe presentado al foro. Otras líneas de acción han sido la producción de información, la asistencia técnica a los países, así como la capacitación en el uso de esta información a organizaciones indígenas. También hemos realizado reuniones tendientes a construir procesos participativos entre los institutos de estadística y los pueblos indígenas, actividades de carácter interagencial. Al respecto, queremos hacer referencia particular al seminario-taller sobre los censos 2010 y los pueblos indígenas, organizado en la CEPAL del 19 al 21 de noviembre del 2008. En este seminario participaron más de 100 representantes de institutos de estadística, de organizaciones indígenas, organismos de gobierno y otros. La gran mayoría de los países de América Latina han incluido preguntas de identificación de pueblos indígenas en los censos de la Ronda 2000. En este sentido, depositamos la confianza en los estados para que no permitan un retroceso al respecto y que, por tanto, para la Ronda 2010, los esfuerzos se centren en al menos 4 ejes de acción. Mejorar sustancialmente la calidad de los datos, generar información complementaria con pertinencia cultural, garantizar la plena participación de los pueblos indígenas en todo el proceso censal y democratizar el acceso a la información. Dado que en el seminario se arribó una serie de recomendaciones, solicitamos al Foro Permanente el apoyo a las mismas y su promoción para lograr avances sustantivos en la próxima ronda de censos. Finalmente, queremos hacer referencia a un proyecto iniciado en 2008 entre el CELADE y el Fondo de Población de Naciones Unidas que tiene como objetivo general la promoción de la salud materna desde un enfoque intercultural y de derechos. Por tanto, durante este año seguiremos trabajando en esta materia tomando en cuenta los acuerdos del Plan de Acción de la Conferencia Internacional sobre la Población y el Desarrollo y la evaluación a los 15 años de su adopción. En este sentido, apoyamos la recomendación del Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas para que el tema del próximo taller del Foro Permanente a realizarse en enero 2010 verse sobre pueblos indígenas y salud, con énfasis en salud sexual y reproductiva. Considerando que en América Latina existen al menos 670 pueblos indígenas con una enorme diversidad demográfica y territorial, somos conscientes que los desafíos en materia de información bajo el alero de los derechos humanos no son menores, y puesto que la visibilidad estadística de los pueblos indígenas es un asunto impostergable, merece toda la voluntad política de los Estados. La CEPAL, a través del CELADE, se compromete a apoyar a los países de la región en este proceso. Muchas gracias por su atención.
Thank you very much, Fabiana Popola. The ECLAC has indeed been leading the process of really influencing the national census and disaggregation of data, and we thank you very much also for the report that you have given to us. I'd like to call now on Inaida Charupa, who is from the Pueblo Chiquitano and CEDAW, and after him, I will call Stanley Liao Anji from the Organization of Indigenous Peoples in Suriname. Is Inaida Charupa in the room? No? Okay, I'll call on Stanley Liao Anji, Organization of Indigenous Peoples of Suriname. Okay, you sit down and press the button, please. You have 3 minutes.
Which one? This one, Stanley.
Stanley Liao Anji.
Por eso cuando uno
está diciendo que hable ya,
le hable, hable.
Are you, excuse me, are you Inaida or Stanley? So how about the other one whose lights are on? Are you Inaida?
Yeah.
Inaida, okay, let's start with Inaida first, okay. You have the floor. Then Stanley will come afterwards.
Muy buenas tardes, un saludo cordial a los miembros del Foro Permanente. Como mujer indígena, las mujeres indígenas de América Latina hemos sido protagonistas de todos los procesos reivindicativos, aunque hasta ahora no se haya podido reconocer nuestra participación. Por eso, como mujeres indígenas, exhortamos a las Naciones Unidas a través de sus diferentes programas poder apoyar aún más a las mujeres indígenas para que podamos consolidar organizaciones de mujeres que fortalezcan nuestras estructuras ya consolidadas. Solo de esta manera las mujeres indígenas podremos comenzar a sentirnos reales, visibilizadas y no simplemente figuras en papeles y documentales. Queremos dejar de inspirar lástima, pues somos capaces de construir nuestro desarrollo. Ya lo hemos demostrado en este largo camino que aún nos queda por recorrer. Los países de los cuales representamos somos miembros de las Naciones Unidas, por lo tanto deben construirse en garante de los derechos de las mujeres, especialmente de las mujeres indígenas. Entonces la ayuda que recibamos de ustedes debe llegar hasta nosotras por medio de nuestras organizaciones matrices legítimamente construidas. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. I would like to call now on Stanley Liao Anji. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Stanley Liao Anji, and I'm from Kalinya people in Suriname. I would like to inform the Permanent Forum and all indigenous people present that even though Suriname has supported the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, and there have been judicial rulings against the state Suriname by the Inter-American Court on human rights, the rights of indigenous people in Suriname are not being fully respected, particularly in the area of land rights and the right to free, prior, and informed consent. That there is very little information available on topics that will potentially have serious negative impacts on the indigenous people of Suriname, including the issue of RED and FCPF. That particularly small-scale gold mining with the use of mercury has led to detrimental negative impacts on the health of indigenous people in various regions of Suriname, and yet not effective measures are being taken against the destruction of our water resource, pollution of our environment, and illness of our people as a result of mercury intoxication, example, brain damage and organ disease. That the indigenous community are already suffering from the impacts of climate change, including floods, drought, change in seasons, and change in flora and fauna. Based on this consideration, we ask the forum to urge the government of Suriname to effectuate the following recommendation. With respect to mining, 1, ratification of and respect for the UN Declaration on the Right of Indigenous People as well as of the Framework Law on Indigenous Rights in Suriname by the National Assembly of Suriname, in particular regarding land rights and FPIC. 2, government and private sector, national and international, must use the FPIC principle. 3, gold mining in indigenous area must be abolished and measures must be taken to improve the health condition in relation to mercury intoxication, drinking water, and food supply. 4, environmental and social impact assessment must be done prior to mining activity with the full and effective participation of the indigenous people, including regarding the cumulative effect in the case of integrated industries. 5, full and effective participation during the development of new environmental legislation. 6, revision of the Mining Act with the aim on including and respecting indigenous people rights. 7, rehabilitation of mine areas and compensation at international standard in the case of change and destruction of the environment. With respect to the infrastructure initiative for the region South America project IRSA, 1, follow the international recognized principle of FPIC with regard to IRSA. 2, undertake IRSA for all projects and projects with the framework of IRSA. 3, infrastructure project may not negatively impact the rights of indigenous people, in particular our land rights. With respect to climate change, 1, reduce the negative impacts on climate change. 2, undertake more research in relation to climate change and its impact, and the result of such research must be accessible for indigenous people. 3, make available funds in order for indigenous organizations to provide sufficient and adequate information to the communities. 4, full and effective participation of indigenous people in process that can be influenced on us and on our right, including the RED, the RPIN, and the ERP plan process, and to follow the FPIC principle in those processes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stanley Liao Anji, Organization of Indigenous Peoples and Suriname. I now call on the representative of the Observer Government of Spain, Ms. Dolores Martin, Director of AECI, and after her, the representative of Finland. Ms. Dolores Martin, you have the floor.
Sí, muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Señoras y señores miembros del foro, mi delegación quisiera comentar brevemente dos cuestiones relativas al tema 4 de la agenda y, en concreto, los relativos a la aplicación de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. mediante sus actuaciones en distintos ámbitos y señaladamente en el de la cooperación al desarrollo, el Gobierno español trata de promover el contenido de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas en cumplimiento del artículo 42. Como un ejemplo específico de nuestro compromiso, quisiera referirme al proyecto de fortalecimiento de la Mesa Permanente de la Procuraduría para la Defensa de los Derechos Humanos sobre Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas en El Salvador. Con dicha acción, España quiere promover el fortalecimiento de las estructuras organizativas de los pueblos indígenas de este país, potenciando su participación política y la promoción del reconocimiento de sus derechos. España considera fundamental, además, fomentar la coordinación y cooperación entre los diferentes mecanismos de Naciones Unidas con competencias en la promoción de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, para que tanto la declaración como los trabajos y recomendaciones de estos instrumentos creados en el seno de las organizaciones sean aplicados en la práctica y eficaces en el terreno. Por ello, y como ha recordado tanto José Carlos Morales como el relator especial James Anaya, España albergó entre los días 4 al 6 de febrero de este año el Seminario Internacional de Expertos Implementación de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, el papel de los mecanismos con mandato específico sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, con el objetivo de fomentar la cooperación entre el foro, el relator especial y el nuevo mecanismo de expertos sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas del Consejo de Derechos Humanos. Quisiera trasladarles el firme compromiso del Gobierno de España por seguir apoyando decididamente estos procesos y espacios de intercambio, complementariedad y coordinación. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dolores Martin. I now call on the representative of Finland, Mr. Eric Landberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Respected members of the Permanent Forum, honorable delegates and participants to the 8th session. The delegation of Finland is pleased to address the issue of the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Madam Chair, Finland participated actively in the drafting process of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in cooperation with its indigenous people, the Sami. The declaration encompasses a wide array of topics that are essential for promoting the status of indigenous peoples, as well as provide states and other actors with a significant tool for strengthening the protection and promotion of indigenous peoples' rights worldwide. In this connection, Finland is pleased to note that the message of the declaration has been adopted by a growing number of states. Furthermore, the declaration is an important tool for a better realization of the principle of full and effective participation of indigenous peoples in such decision-making processes that affect them. In order for the declaration to have the intended positive effect, however, governments, NGOs and UN institutions should take measures to raise awareness of the declaration among indigenous peoples and other relevant actors. Madam Chair, the declaration sets out a standard of achievement on the political level. Instead of creating new international obligations, it pursues the important goal of the full entitlement by indigenous peoples to the rights guaranteed in existing international agreements. In line with this standard-setting role, states are encouraged to take such measures as they deem appropriate for the achievement of the needs pursued by the declaration. States are thus encouraged to promote respect for the declaration by enhancing the implementation of any human rights instruments to which they are parties. The adoption of the declaration also created the framework for the work of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. In terms of the role of the distinguished forum under Article 2 of the declaration, Finland wishes to express its support for the Permanent Forum as the important global arena for addressing questions on indigenous issues in cooperation with indigenous representatives and states, as well as on the basis of mutual respect and partnership. The forum has a notable role under its mandated areas of work, in particular in the possible issuing of interpretative statements on the declaration, dissemination of good practices on its implementation, awareness-raising efforts, and capacity building, including with regard to its efforts under the special themes adopted for the sessions. Madam Chair, the spirit of the declaration is not necessarily enhanced in the most effective manner by introducing new reporting obligations to states, as the fulfillment of indigenous people's rights is at present periodically monitored by the established human rights treaty bodies. In addressing the implementation of the various human rights obligations, the human rights treaty bodies survey the implementation of indigenous people's rights by issuing concrete recommendations to states for the realization of these rights. In terms of human rights treaties that concern specifically the rights of indigenous people, Finland lastly wishes to address the issue of the draft Nordic Sami Convention. An analysis of the draft convention's provisions in the light of Finland's domestic legislation and international obligations is presently underway. The relevant working group hopes to be able to submit its memorandum before fall this year with the aim of enabling the drafting process of the convention to be continued. A possible Nordic Sami Convention would in a significant manner enable a closer cross-border cooperation in matters concerning the Sami indigenous people. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Eric Lundberg of Finland. I'd like to call now on Miriam Sanchez from the Latin American Women's Caucus. After her, I will call on Joanne Carling from the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus. Miriam Sanchez, you have the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Con profundo pesar notamos que después de 8 años de estar aportando las mujeres indígenas al proceso del foro permanente con sus recomendaciones sobre la situación y las condiciones de vida, muchas mujeres en el mundo siguen sufriendo igual o peores situaciones por los modelos de desarrollo que se implementan en los territorios y tierras en donde vivimos, muchas veces sin el consentimiento libre, previo e informado de nuestros pueblos, y donde desarrollamos nuestras formas tradicionales de vida en conexión con la Madre Tierra. Nos preguntamos, ¿qué ha sido de estas propuestas que las mujeres venimos aportando a través de este espacio? Porque aún seguimos invisibilizadas y se sigue cometiendo toda clase de violaciones, a pesar de que las metas del milenio plantean la reducción de la pobreza a otros temas para mejorar estas condiciones, entendiendo que en esta elaboración de los OEDM las mujeres no estamos participando plenamente en su implementación. Por otro lado, existe la necesidad de que se tome en cuenta la diversidad existente entre las etnias y planteando las soluciones urgentes de las problemáticas de las mujeres indígenas, pues se requiere impulsar su participación y desarrollo en estrategias apropiadas para este caso, sin vulnerar el derecho a la libre determinación garantizada con los convenios internacionales, tales como la Declaración Universal de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas y el Convenio 169 de la OIT. Por lo tanto, las recomendaciones. Pedimos al Foro Permanente que se comprometa a vigilar el cumplimiento de los tratados internacionales que tienen que ver con la erradicación de la violencia, racismo y discriminación, asumiendo el compromiso de participar en forma activa en la formulación, evaluación y seguimiento de políticas públicas internacionales, regionales, en base a las recomendaciones de Durban. Que se tome en cuenta el papel de las jóvenes indígenas y su incidencia en la elaboración de los planes y programas y su capacidad de manejar estas iniciativas y contribuir el verdadero desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas de acuerdo a nuestra cosmovisión. Que se designe un relator especial para monitorear y preparar un informe sobre la situación de las mujeres indígenas que sufren desplazamientos forzados, violaciones de sus derechos humanos en general. Que el foro permanente inste a los estados la asignación de presupuestos suficientes para contribuir trabajando en las lenguas indígenas, con lo cual se podría establecer los nidos de aprendizaje de las lenguas, elaboración de material pedagógico, de planes y programas y capacitación de maestros con metodología adecuadas y
culturalmente pertinentes. Por último, señora presidenta, a través de la Comisión Internacional del Arte de los Pueblos Indígenas, la CIAPI, notificaciones del foro que la recomendación que emitió en el inciso E del 2005, artículo 43, inciso E, C, el 19 del 2005, se cumplió y cuyo informe se entregó en la oficina de esta instancia del foro permanente. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Miriam Sanchez. I'd like now to call on Joanne Carling from the Asia Indigenous Peoples Pact. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Indigenous Peoples in Asia welcome the inclusion of this agenda on the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Much is yet to be done in Asia for the implementation of the declaration. The militarization of our communities and expropriation of our lands and resources continue to prevail in spite of our urgent appeals and actions to protect our rights. Likewise, some of our leaders continue to experience illegal arrests and detention, threats and harassments, and political killings and disappearances are also taking place in some countries. In spite of the adoption of the declaration, our human rights situation is yet to improve dramatically. Most governments in the region have yet to legally recognize the existence of indigenous peoples with inherent collective rights. While we are called or referred to in different names, such as tribals, national minorities, hill tribes, among others, we share common features as indigenous peoples and are entitled to the recognition of our collective rights based on the declaration. As most states in Asia voted favorably for the adoption of the declaration by the UN General Assembly, the next step should be for states to pave the way for the recognition of indigenous peoples at the national level. In this regard, we strongly call for the establishment of a national mechanism for the recognition of indigenous peoples involving the states, indigenous peoples, national human rights institutions, and UN agencies. This mechanism can be the forum for meaningful dialogues on the specificities and particular circumstances of indigenous peoples at the local and national levels and to address the concerns of states in the recognition of indigenous peoples. We believe this will facilitate greater and mutual understanding on how the declaration can be implemented at the national level with due consideration to the national context of indigenous peoples and the states. Contrary to the fear of many states, the implementation of the declaration can achieve the resolution of outstanding conflicts instead of aggravating it. Further, this will benefit not only indigenous peoples, but also states and the rest of the population towards the achievement of national peace and sustainable development. We thereby appeal to Asian states to take the necessary steps for the recognition of indigenous peoples in their respective countries towards the implementation of the declaration. We fully support the report of the expert meeting on the implementation of Article 42 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We fully endorse the recommendations of this expert meeting and urge the permanent forum to adopt these recommendations. On the work of the Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples, Professor James Anaya, the Asia Caucus wish to convey our sincere appreciation to his commitment and dedication in addressing our concerns, which he has clearly demonstrated in his visits to three countries of Asia in less than a year, namely to India, Nepal, and Indonesia. We fully support his recommendations, and we look forward to his follow-up activities also in countries visited by the former Special Rapporteur. Due to time limitation for this presentation, we have a separate statement on the work of the Special Rapporteur. We again extend our full support and cooperation with the Special Rapporteur, James Anaya, and we highly commend his work for the protection of our rights. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, John Carling of the Asia Indigenous People's Pact. Caucus. I would like to call now on the representative of Greece, Ms. Erika Daes, the advisor and the former chair of the Working Group on Indigenous Populations. Ms. Erika Daes, you have the floor, Madam.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I would like to begin my brief statement by expressing the congratulations of my delegation to you, Madam Chairperson, to the other distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, and to its secretariat. I would like also to congratulate the distinguished rapporteur of the Permanent Forum, Mr. Mike Donson, for the great honor and distinction to be named by the government of his country as the Australian of the Year 2008. Please allow me now, Madam Chairperson, to pay tribute to the two special rapporteurs, the eminent professor of international law, Mr. James Anaya, and to Mr. Jose Carlos Morales, vice chairman of the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples, for their extremely important statements, but also for their valuable contribution in promoting the human rights and fundamental freedoms of the indigenous peoples. Madam Chairperson, in connection with the implementation of Article 42 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, my delegation would like, first of all, to express appreciation and support to the recommendations contained in the comprehensive report of the International Expert Group meeting on the role of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues contained in document EC 19-2009-2. Secondly, I would like to make the following concrete proposals with the framework of the implementation of Article 42 of the Declaration. The distinguished members of the Permanent Forum should consider the advisability of proposing the appointment of a legal officer within the Permanent Forum Secretariat in order, inter alia, to guide the interpretation of the Declaration's provisions with the understanding that the Declaration calls, among others, for a genuine and inspired partnership between states and indigenous peoples. Also, the legal officer should undertake the responsibility to examine the legal validity and the interpretation of the treaties concluded years ago between indigenous peoples and the Crown. Further, the legal officer will provide an interpretation of the provisions of Article 34 of the Declaration concerning the right of indigenous peoples to promote, develop and maintain their institutional structures and their distinct customs, spirituality, traditions, procedures, practices, and in the cases where they exist, in particular, the juridical system of or customs. It is important, Madam Chairperson, the recognition of indigenous legal knowledge in indigenous law, and I underline the words in indigenous law, and to value this knowledge and honor diversity. Furthermore, among the main responsibilities and competences of the legal officer should be his obligation to create and maintain a comprehensive research database and archives in print and web-based form of domestic and international indigenous law-related articles, reports, judicial decisions, and international and regional human rights and international humanitarian law instruments. In addition, the legal officer will facilitate a constructive dialogue between states and indigenous peoples so that the truly productive and mutually beneficial relationship between these two main parties can be launched and sustained. The second proposal of my delegation is related to the obligation of the Permanent Forum Secretariat to encourage indigenous community to submit to it reports of the best and worst practices of implementation of the declaration in the state in which they live. And C, the Permanent Forum should assist and enable indigenous communities to submit their sustainable development projects with the understanding it will forward them to the United Nations system competent departments and bodies, and in particular to the United Nations Development Program for approval and funding and implementation. Madam Chairperson, my delegation would be grateful if you and the distinguished other members of the Permanent Forum should consider the aforesaid proposals with a view to be included as recommendations in its final report of the present session. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Erica Dias, and for your very constructive recommendations, which indeed the members of the forum will take into consideration. I would like now to call on the representative of Norway, Mr. Egil Ulili, President of the Norwegian Sami Parliament. You have the floor, sir.
Foruma Jodi Heggi. Mun hälidän vuos tohtohit ahti sämetikkille tuottavas kumi piäsämelheät pistuvas foruma rahkanahti tjohkima iisiden tänjai sesumnas jokchamanus tänjai. Sämelhe sin rahtsamousa ahti vajtju puori jällin vui tai jällin eftui tohkehämi ja rahtsamme vajtjut vaikavuodai kähtsalan tjauti vättisvuodai kuulahallan ja kompromissa bokte. Sämedigillä ovatel tiedihan pistävässä formi, että missä lähtien oktavuodas lää erä tahkan konsultasioonneprosedyyrä sietetuussa rädehuussaan toimapiidu ja lahka antima pirra matkusket sämi perustuusilta. Takku missä konsulteeren lää Ektun min esmerdan rektai, äsima kuski mikida. Vaikku mii mangmus jain, tjalahan ja luoppahan konsultasiumnai mangas törrä äsis tohkares puottusiun. Te fertin liikkää vaidalit, kun mii tattekin ehlä hoitsun tuotta konsultasiumnai veulasvuoda puot äsit matkuske luonturisuusryysöitä kievähäppi min kuovlun. Erinomaiset äsin Oda Mineralahka ja Luossa Biptu Mieras. Oda Mineralahka lää parkojuvun äänet kuin loijai. Tattu aina maat lää tjöttyn erinomais Odas Matskuuses resurssakun Afkastalmi ja Mihtumierin täyjälle ja läämmas tuoremus ekonomais äyki nuu onnehis äikkis kuin lääveulas. Rädehus chanmustaatti nyksemans kvektlöi päivä kvektatuvak ovtsi propositionna oda mineralaa pirra. Sämedigi i lähtorjun tämän propositionna tani kiechelku laakka eftuhussas vailu kvekta tehäläs pieli. Laakka eftuhussas vailu min käipätuusai tasa aatte. Äsimennundan njolkatuussat mineral rogkami ja avkastallan ohtsamita ektu perillä samalaan miehtä arvivillus sämi kovlu. Tämä laakka ehtus, millä rädjä ain tai veulosvuodai Finnmarkui. Ja iki tjuovu ilokonnesumna kuhta tjecha ja vihtum artikla ja standara oanna alkoalman julkaisuussa ohtsun blokka ja kolmulle kvekta artikkali. Ige laakka eftus mieti sämetikki alkoalmo puhtatussa käipätussi, mi tjuovu ilu tjuodikäkt kuhtoi ovtsi artikla vihton lohkai tjukkis kuekta. Sämetikki häälitä uppalas meradussa mi pitkän julkatussa puhtatussa ja haltasan orgina birra. Tät vai tjelka gii, kallekä haltasit alkoalmo puhtatussa ja muuta kallekä tahkojuvu nuu ahti täht puhta burrin taittaa sämelaiseita ja päihikoottia keitä tähkö äsken. Rädehus lähellä kun täi käipätuussa ja tjuujuha sämi vaikavuoda läpi kotti tjelka täppäi vahtivas menu täppäi, mikä äsken sämi vaikavuoda arvivillu sämi kovlun Finnmarkku matabelde. Samedigi idokke tai akai nu kuhka gudat han guske mineralai otsema ja pohkamita man norkala melde gulle staati. Ja dastu i gedahallo juvu lihke planejuvun lahkaparkkus chuvuli sami voikafuuda arvalusa. Pidas kahtin departementmanga ja luontohaltisan direktoraatta la rahkaniskuattan oda laa ja chaukasa njulkaduussa ei meraluossa biutui. Säämme digi i ädde manne eftuhuvu chaukasa muuttema ja manne eftuhuvu asahuvu konsensuun ordne meraluossa biutui. Oudalku oudituvu oda laahka säämme kuulestan veikahuudai pirra. Nuumo lää eftuhuvun. Foruma jodihänkin. Säämme digi mielas liivtsi pöörde juus pissivas forum. Satsi korahallat maittai alko almu voikafuudai mera resursseida. Miiläs semmäs valmasat vasalasti täkkä korahallamis etsämät väsähuusain. Vaikka vielä kedäkkä vättisvuoda mai mun län naamahan, te hälidän toivottahit tuottavasvuoda tänne oftasparkkun mai sämedikillä aasahan Nordka kovtas, regionaala ja päikkäläs eisävältikun. Välde äkki ja naapse njulikit patil tjuodi jai patil kähtsama ja vielä hämi mai säämi alemusla gillen. Staatta ei se välditlä, mannimus koe kolmulla jai, tjallahan stoerra tjelkademi vai sähti miehtä sähmilatsa käypäduuseta ja vertemuseta, aatte voika vuotta tohkijuvuit ja aatte min gilla, kulttuura ja elinvuoji, aatne juvui arvus. Mi vuodetit, atte tät pukte puori vuotosi. Kiitu perustumis.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank warmly Mr. Igil Oli and also express again our thanks for them hosting the precessional meeting of the members of the Permanent Forum in Karasjoka in Norway. Thank you very much, sir, and we look forward to further cooperation with you. I would like now to call on Miguel Palacin Quispe, who is speaking on behalf of Kawi and Koika. Is Miguel Palacin in the room? Yes, you have the floor, sir. Yes.
Muy buenas tardes. Yo vengo del Perú. En principio quiero agradecer la solidaridad con la lucha de nuestros pueblos que vivimos en los actuales momentos en un estado de emergencia con un gobierno que está imponiendo políticas en contra de los pueblos indígenas. 102 decretos legislativos que atentan contra los derechos y actualmente en un estado de emergencia y no permiten que el Parlamento debata y derogue las leyes que atentan contra los derechos y vulneran el convenio 169, la Constitución Política del Estado. Por eso quiero llamar al foro y al alto comisionado, llamar al gobierno de Perú para que se tome atención al respecto. Porque estamos en camino a una cumbre continental de pueblos indígenas donde alcanzaremos y debatiremos las propuestas. La COICA, la KOI y SICA, estamos viniendo a participar de manera unitaria a este foro y a aportar, y esta es nuestra palabra, para decir en este tiempo, donde por un lado están las políticas internacionales para proteger derechos, están los esfuerzos que se vienen haciendo en espacios como este, pero por otro lado se propicia el régimen liberal económico para vulnerar los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en territorios en el sur. Principalmente con la industria extractiva, principalmente con la industria transnacional que están invadiendo territorios, desplazando poblaciones, militarizando, criminalizando. En Colombia se hace con armas, en el Perú con leyes, en Chile se persigue con la ley antiterrorista. Entonces, ¿podemos decir de qué derecho estamos hablando? ¿Derecho de quiénes? ¿De la ciudadanía, de los pueblos o de las multinacionales? Por eso queremos pedir a este foro que la coordinación y el proceso del nivel de avance del decenio debe tener un ritmo de evaluación permanente para que este, con este foro y las Naciones Unidas, pueden vigilar el cumplimiento de los tratados a que se han llegado. Asimismo, hay que revisar e incidir que los objetivos del milenio sean una práctica política en las constituciones del Estado, y asimismo la visión del organismo de desarrollo tiene que estar basado en la identidad de nuestros pueblos. Recomendamos igualmente al foro permanente, a los estados, a los organismos, desarrollar una campaña mundial por la defensa de la madre naturaleza. El mundo está en camino a la hecatombe, con la aparición de nuevas enfermedades, con una crisis financiera, energética, alimentaria. Les proponemos la práctica del buen vivir. La práctica del buen vivir, que significa no al crecimiento económico, sino a vivir en equidad, en paz, en armonía, horizontalizando todo. La Pachamama nos da de todo para vivir, pero no la podemos destruir. En ese sentido, hermana presidenta y hermanos miembros, yo quiero llamar que desde el sur estamos trabajando por el cambio y que este cambio se ve reflejado acá. Y muchas gracias por la oportunidad.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Miguel Palacin from Peru. I would like now to call on Jennifer Awingan, who is with the Asia Pacific Youth Network, after which I will call on the representative of Denmark. Yeah, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to take this opportunity to inform the Permanent Forum of the Unities and Recommendations of the National Indigenous Youth Conference on UNDRIP and Climate Change on the implementation of the UNDRIP held in Davao, Philippines from May 8 to 13, 2009. This conference was organized by Asia Pacific Indigenous Youth Network. We also thank Asia Indigenous Peoples PAC, Tebtaba Foundation, Lands Life and the Canadian Embassy to the Philippines, and Taiwan Foundation for Democracy for supporting the important meeting of the indigenous youth. The conference was attended by 68 individuals representing 38 indigenous youth organizations from 23 communities around the country. We reaffirm our role as heirs of our heritage and not only future but present leaders of our communities. We unite to defend our land, life, resources, and promote indigenous people's rights at all levels. We welcome the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples at the international level, and we express our recognition to the states who express support to the declaration at the UN General Assembly. We continue to call on those countries who abstain to find their way to support the declaration, and to those who did not support to rethink and recognize their wrongdoings to indigenous peoples in their countries. We are united to exercise vigilance over the implementation of the UNDRIP. We commit ourselves to render our time, knowledge, creativity, and resourcefulness for the promotion and implementation of the declaration. We call upon the states in Asia and the Pacific to recognize indigenous people's rights and to adopt and implement in good faith the UNDRIP in their respective countries. While we appreciate the Philippine government for having a law on indigenous peoples, we express our concern on other laws and policies undermining indigenous people's rights, like the Mining Act of 1995, the National Protected Area System, and other laws which undermines the implementation of the UNDRIP. We further support the call to review the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Act to take into consideration the recommendations of the indigenous communities and organizations who conducted a 10-year review on the implementation of the IPRA. We therefore ask the Permanent Forum to recommend the Philippine government to review the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Act. We also recommend the Permanent Forum, states and UN agencies to include indigenous youth and their organizations on the monitoring and implementation of the UNDRIP, particularly Articles Number 7, 13, 14, 17, 21, and 22 of the Declaration, which are concerned with indigenous children and youth. Finally, we acknowledge the appreciation of the Permanent Forum to the Indigenous Caucus in its 2008 report. Also, we acknowledge the assistance of the Permanent Forum Secretariat to the UN, to the
to the Youth Caucus and the UNDESA for allocating 23% of the UN Voluntary Fund for Indigenous Youth Projects. In this regard, we recommend the Permanent Forum to continue encouraging states, UN agencies, and NGOs to support Indigenous youth initiatives and include Indigenous youth in their programs to implement and monitor the UN RIP. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jennifer Awinga. I'll now call on the representative of the Observer Government of Denmark, Ms. Eva Rabiemagle. Yes, you have the floor, Madam.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It is with great satisfaction that my delegation participates in the discussions of the Permanent Forum on the issue of human rights and on the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We would like to thank the international expert group that met in January this year and discuss the role of the Permanent Forum in the implementation of the Article 42 of the Declaration for their interesting report and their recommendations. We look forward to following the deliberations of the Permanent Forum on this important issue. I would like to point out a few recommendations which, in our view, are of particular importance. First of all, we support the permanent inclusion of an agenda item for the Permanent Forum dealing with the Declaration. Secondly, we support the idea of inviting all relevant actors to submit reports to the Permanent Forum on the implementation of the Declaration, with the view to having and ensuring constructive dialogue. Denmark declares itself fully willing to engage in such a dialogue and has already this year, in cooperation with Greenland, submitted a report to the Permanent Forum concerning the new Greenland self-government process, which is a major step towards the full implementation of the Declaration. To mark this important development, we arranged a side event this Monday on the same topic. We have listened with great interest to the Special Rapporteur, Dr. James Anaya, and the Vice Chair of the Expert Mechanism, Mr. José Carlos Morales. We are pleased to see that all three UN mechanisms with specific mandates to address the indigenous peoples are increasingly emphasizing the benefits of close coordination. We see strong potential synergies between their respective work and believe that these synergies can be enhanced by close coordination, rational division of labor based on comparative advantages, and strategic cooperation. To ensure indigenous peoples and their organizations the best possibilities for dialogue with the three mechanisms and with states, not only in New York but also in Geneva, we will continue to work towards achieving the best possible platform for dialogue on human rights under the Human Rights Council. We welcome in this respect the outcome document of the recent Durban Review Conference. The outcome document emphasized inter alia the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Lastly, Madam Chair, I would like to briefly touch upon the issue of human rights and climate change. A recent report from the OHCHR and the Human Rights Council resolution from March this year recognize that the effects of climate change will be felt most acutely by those segments of the population who are already in a vulnerable situation, such as indigenous peoples. Climate change is threatening the traditional lifestyles and culture of indigenous peoples. Therefore, all relevant bodies and stakeholders should involve indigenous peoples when discussing, designing, and implementing climate change policies and programs nationally and internationally. Therefore, we find it highly relevant that the upcoming panel discussions on the relationship between climate change and human rights in the Human Rights Council to include representatives from the Permanent Forum and the Expert Mechanism. I thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you very much, representative of the government of Denmark, Ms. Eva Rabiamagle. Now I call on the representative of Ecuador, and after him, I will call on my colleagues from the forum, Margaret Lucaua and Bartolome Clavero. You have the floor, Mr. Pedro de la Cruz, member of the National Assembly of Ecuador.
Ecuador mama jak tapa shutipi tu kuita na paita chaya chipani. Gracias, señora presidenta. Queremos saludar a todo el foro en nombre de Ecuador como constituyente y asambleísta nacional. Queremos decir que Ecuador ha avanzado bastante en este proceso de la implementación de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en nuestra Constitución. Por lo tanto, queremos agradecer al relator especial que nos visitó justamente cuando nosotros estábamos discutiendo, analizando la Declaración Universal de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas para poner en la nueva Constitución Política del Estado. Por lo tanto, nuestro Estado es un Estado unitario, intercultural y plurinacional. Se reconocen los derechos colectivos de los pueblos indígenas, las lenguas indígenas como las dos importantes, el quichua y el shuar, como lengua oficial de relación intercultural. Se reconoce la administración de justicia indígena, entre otros. Tal vez el día de ayer o anteayer se preguntaba algún conflicto en el tema minero. Nosotros queremos aclarar de que en la etapa neoliberal en nuestro país se legisló para regalar las áreas mineras a las empresas transnacionales, desde $1 hasta $16 la hectárea, para poner incluso en la bolsa de valores para negociar, incluso vinculados empleados en nuestro país, se festinaron las concesiones. Cuando se encontraba en la mina solamente podían pagar $20 la hectárea. Con esto se entregaron y festinaron concesiones, incluso áreas protegidas. 5,400,000 hectáreas se concesionaron en la etapa neoliberal. Nosotros en la Asamblea Constituyente elaboramos un mandato para que esas concesiones se reviertan al Estado. Y así lo ha sucedido, se va revirtiéndose al Estado ya cerca de 4,000,000 de hectáreas, pero en el mismo mandato teníamos que ordenar, regular, para que construir una ley para que se ordene y que el Estado sea propietario de esos recursos. Y en ese sentido, nosotros queremos decir que en la ley que se construye en el país se prohíbe la actividad minera en áreas protegidas. Se crea por primera vez la empresa nacional minera en el Ecuador. Excepcionalmente el Estado podrá delegar la participación en el sector minero a través de las concesiones. El orden de prelación en la Constitución claramente se protege el recurso agua, primero para la alimentación, para consumo humano, segundo para la soberanía alimentaria y luego para actividades de agroexportación. Entonces, está protegido totalmente la Constitución y la ley el recurso agua. Y asimismo, si encuentra actividad, digamos, minería, el 50% del 60% de las regalías sería para las comunidades. Pero tenemos que ir avanzando, mejorando, es un proceso progresivo que vamos mejorando la situación en nuestro país y la Constitución es uno de los más avanzados del mundo, la Constitución ecuatoriana. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pedro Cruz from Ecuador. I would like now to give the floor to my colleague Margaret Lucaua and then later on to Bartolome Clavero. You have the floor. We have 5 minutes left. We asked the interpreters to extend the time, but they are only giving us 5 minutes. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to extend my thanks to the two speakers, the Special Rapporteur and the
expert mechanism member of indigenous peoples. My question goes to Professor Naya. I have listened keenly and interest, with much interest, to the note that you've given to us. I've realized that most of your visits have been to other continents than Africa. Few have been in Africa. And I'm sure this gives impacts to the indigenous peoples that you've visited. I'm aware that your invitation, to invite you to the country has been made official at times. Looking at the conflicts in Africa that has displaced many or rendered many homeless, compared with the effects of climate change, that has brought a lot of consequences in most countries of Africa, such as Uganda, Sudan, Congo, and others. What is your take in situations where indigenous peoples are not able to report issues because of some other reasons beyond their control? What would be your comment on this? Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will ask the rapporteurs to comment tomorrow because they're still with us for the whole half day. I would like to call on Bartolome Clavero. Yeah.
And then I have one
another. Yeah.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Entonces, muy brevemente, saltándome algunos comentarios que quería hacer a propósito de las presentaciones del relator especial y del vicepresidente del mecanismo de expertos. Voy solo a formular una pregunta al relator especial en relación a la publicación y difusión de los documentos que produce cuando no hace visitas oficiales en el sentido común y clásico de otros relatores especiales, sino que visita por seguimiento de informes anteriores o por algunas circunstancias especiales a algún país durante poco tiempo, pero con el fruto de algún informe dirigido a ese país que no tiene la misma difusión que los informes de las visitas oficiales propiamente dichas. Me refiero a dos ejemplos. El informe que dirigió a la Asamblea Constituyente del Ecuador sobre el estándar internacional de reconocimiento de derechos de los pueblos indígenas por constituciones de estados, y el informe que dirigió al gobierno de Chile sobre el estándar internacional de la consulta. La difusión de estos informes no tiene la misma amplitud que la de los otros informes, y son tantos o más importantes. Yo por ejemplo, pienso que el informe sobre Ecuador se le podría dirigir al gobierno de Colombia, que ratifica la declaración pretendiendo que eso no requiere nada respecto a la interpretación de la Constitución. El informe de Chile se le podría dirigir a Perú, que está ignorando, ya no digo el estándar internacional sobre la consulta, sino la consulta misma, teniendo también ratificado el convenio 169. El informe sobre Ecuador está editado como anexo del informe al Consejo de Derechos Humanos, pero lo cual significa que es muy difícil de localizar. El informe a Chile creo que ni siquiera está editado o no está editado de una manera que salte a la vista por parte del relator especial. Esa es mi pregunta. Si no pudiera mejorarse la difusión de esos informes que me parecen muy importantes, no son menores, no solo interesan al gobierno a los que se destinan a estos informes. Nada más. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. Before we adjourn, I'd like to ask the Secretary to make some announcements.
The Permanent Forum will have a close meeting with the Indigenous Peoples Caucus tomorrow at 9 a.m. in this room. And everybody is requested to be here as early as possible. Thank you.
In accordance with our program of work, tomorrow we will still continue with our deliberations on item 4 of the agenda. So we will go back to the items, and then we will ask our
experts to respond to some of the questions that were raised. And in the afternoon, we will have the Arctic Council. So this meeting will... Yeah, and I would like to thank the interpreters for extending the time for 10 minutes. We appreciate this very much. Yeah. So this meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
Thank you for...